Welcome back to Buckeye Talk, the multimedia version of Buckeye Talk. Doug LaMaurice, Bill Landis, Tim Bielek, your Ohio State coverage team from Cleveland.com. And not only is this one of the 50 or 60,000 finest Ohio State football podcasts in America, it's also a Facebook Live show. We're doing this for the first time. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/osu.sports. And we have a Facebook Live up there right now.
It feels like a nanny cam. You know, like the things you put inside a teddy bear to, like, to make sure your babysitter's not like smoking cigarettes around your kids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I feel like is happening right now.
Oh, yeah, no.
A little uncomfortable by the watchful eye of Facebook.
I probably should have, like, had this camera running every time you guys come over or in my house, just to, like, keep an eye on you.
Would it be like most nanny cams where you stuff it inside a teddy bear?
Yeah, like, yeah. I meet the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you handle this? As I always say at the end. So, listen, we are going to talk about Tate Martell because two things. We love to talk about Tate Martell, and you love to hear about Tate Martell. And we have actual Tate Martell things to talk about. We're going to talk about recruiting. There's a thing coming up that's going to be interesting. There's a Michigan football basketball point I would like to discuss. Ooh. We will talk about Easter candy, and we will, as always, get to your questions. But first, make sure you're following us on Twitter, at Tim Bielek, at BillLandis25, at Doug LaMaurice. And we want to start with Tate, unless we want to start with the five-star review of the week.
Well, we've
start with the five-star review?
We got two of them. One came in last night from Speedy23. He says, must listen in all caps with four exclamation points? Yeah, it's four. It's hard to tell.
Wow. But he's like, that's a Von Bell playmaker review.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Four exclamation points.
Speedy23 says, been following these guys on Cleveland.com, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, etc. for a few years. You want quick, accurate updates and entertainment? This is the podcast for you. Yes, it was sad to see Ari go, but can everybody start giving my man Tim some credit?
Whoop, whoop.
Which makes me wonder if this was somehow written by a friend I know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, friend, foe, stranger, we'll take them all.
And another review along the similar lines recommended we check out Eli's Barbecue in Cincinnati next time. He's that boy named Toy says place is legit.
Really? Did he give us five stars while recommending a barbecue restaurant?
He gave it to us. He said the insanely good podcast.
Nice. I hope we're not ruining it by putting it on Facebook Live. I already feel more self-conscious.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel more accountable.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, when they can see us, now they can, like, come get us.
Yeah.
You know, before you're just talking into the world.
Also, McDonald's sponsorship.
Yeah, sponsorship. All right, so here's what we want to talk about. Because Urban Meyer, we did a video on Monday after we talked to Urban Meyer, and we said, is Urban Meyer falling in love with Tate Martell? And we might have been projecting a bit because, to be honest, we're falling in love with Tate Martell. Bill Landis has been in love with Tate Martell. Mm-hmm. But there's something to it. Like, we're not just, like, throwing out random Tate Martell stuff just because he's a popular headline name. Like, we are telling you real things. See, now to the Facebook Live audience, Landis did the little smidge fingers. Don't give smidge fingers when the audio people can't hear it.
You know what I like about this being on Facebook Live is that, like, we're seeing the real names of some of the people who follow us. Like, Goon's name is Gunnar Taylor.
Wow. And Gunnar Taylor just put on the Facebook page, it's Goon.
Well, that's why I knew it.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Yeah. Like, that was his comment was, yeah, it's Goon.
Why would you need to change your name to Goon, though? Gunner's a great name.
That's true.
Like Gunner, yeah. Like Gunnar Stahl from Mighty Ducks 2.
Maybe it's Gooner.
Yeah, it's Gooner.
Yeah, this is okay. So listen, it's real Tate Martell stuff because Urban Meyer said his name. Okay? And I'm going to just read this to start us off. And then we're going to talk about, could Tate Martell actually be Ohio State's quarterback? This is what Urban Meyer said on Monday. Question was, you reminded us that Joe Burrow and Dwayne Haskins were neck and neck in training camp, that it was going back and forth throughout the spring. If it stays that way for two more weeks, like, what's going to happen? I'll just worry about Monday's practice, and now that's over, let's have a good Wednesday. But you wish one would take it, and that has not happened. That, I think, is the important framing device of this entire conversation. Another quarterback question. I know they're obviously competing, but where have you seen individual growth with Dwayne, Joe, and Tate in the spring, like individually? Urban Meyer, it's day to day. Tate had a much better day today. He's got a skill set that's a little bit JT-ish as far as the Q run, the Q. He's just built for that, and he actually threw the ball well. He threw the ball well, too. Joe probably had the better scrimmage on Saturday, but then Dwayne came back. So once again, where have I seen the individual growth? That would take too long to go through each guy. I think the quarterback situation, you'd wish one would take it. But then again, you like having the day-to-day competition, which is what I'm seeing. They started very poorly today, and the quarterback, receiver, and receivers got much better as the day went on, which is encouraging. He got asked about all three quarterbacks, and he started off talking about Tate Martell. Now, that's the second framing device of this discussion. Mm-hmm. If it's a two-man race, I think Dan Hope from 11 Warriors is the guy who asked that question. And that's a good question to get out there, and he asked it in a good way. He said, like, just talk about, that's really what we want.
Yeah.
It's like, can you please just talk? But he actually asked it in a question, and he asked it in a way that sort of forced Urban to talk about all three guys. But he said Dwayne, Joe, Tate, and Urban Meyer started with Tate. Now, if Tate Martell wasn't really part of the discussion, he wouldn't answer it that way, right? Does not that answer tell you, just reinforce that this, at this point, still, it really is a three-man battle?
Yeah, I think there's some truth in that. I also think that he had just walked off the field after the ninth practice of the spring, a practice in which Tate Martell had apparently played pretty well. So Martell was, like, fresh on Urban's mind, I think, when he walked into that room, which I'm sure is partly why he's mentioned Tate first. But yeah, I think I buy some of that. Like, it feels to me like most of the conversation up until on Monday, it's always been, if it hasn't been directly said it's two-man competition, it's always been sort of under the umbrella. Like, we're really only talking about two guys here.
Right.
And it didn't feel that way. Like, for the first time, it really didn't feel that way on Monday.
And that was all Urban.
Yeah.
And now, okay, so and then I want to ask you a very specific question, Tim. But is that true, real Urban, or is that, there's a lot of theories, people guessing, is Urban trying to motivate people, are they playing well and he's just trying to, like, keep everybody energized, that he sort of keeps coming in and doesn't say great things about the offense, which is his side of the ball, so it's easy, like, he's sort of almost like criticizing himself by criticizing the offense. Like, is there any reason to not take it at face value? Or the guy just walked off the practice field. Did he in that say, okay, well, here's what I really think, but here's what I actually am going to say because I'm trying to light fires? Or is that real?
We talked about this before, right? Whether or not he plays games like that in the media. And I don't...
When you heard that.
No.
Monday. Did that sound like a game?
No. Because I think I actually believe that he doesn't really do that all that much. Just because it's we've been around him enough in a news conference setting to know that, like, if he doesn't want to talk about something, he's just not going to answer the question, or he'll dodge it, like, not in a rude way, but he just won't answer. Like, it's like, I don't know. He could have said, like, it's the ninth practice of the spring, I don't know, we're just trying to get ready for the spring game, and that could have been his answer and have been the end of it. So, like, he does say things purposefully, for sure, but I don't think they're meant to be deceiving. So, no, my mind did not go there. I guess I could see why someone's would, but my mind did not go there when he said that. Did yours?
Not really, no.
Okay, so people are commenting on the fact that I have a big plush chair, mm-hmm. and Landis is forced to sit on this tiny dining room chair, and I would just like to say, my basement, my chair.
Someday I'll have a basement.
Yeah. Tim, here's the question I want to ask you.
Okay.
This is our third quarterback-centric podcast of the spring. We did one 3 weeks ago that was every scenario for Ohio State's quarterback battle in spring. That was like leading into spring. Then last week we did, what if nobody wins the job? Now we're doing Tate. And the first one, sort of leading into spring, you said, I don't know if you can ever close the door completely on Martell. And we had divided up percentages for scenarios, and you had been left with a 4.4% chance that Tate Martell wins this job. And you were so persuasive in your explanation for that 4.4%. Bill Landis jumped off that uncomfortable wooden dining room chair and said, I'm back in, baby, and make it 5%. Where are you now? 9 practices in. Where are you on the percent chance that Tate Martell is Ohio State's quarterback?
After Monday, it went up a pretty decent amount from 4.4 to, I'm going to say, 10.5%.
10.5%. A 1 in 10 chance. I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah, it's about the same odds as, you know, when they used to have the on the 20-ounce bottles of Coca-Cola or Pepsi, the boys on the cap, and like 1 in every 10 or 12 gave you a free one.
That yeah, kind of, yeah, yeah, it's I like, forgot about that. That's
like,
awesome.
Like, you grab the 20-ounce bottle of Diet Pepsi, you open you unscrew the lid, and it says, Tate Martell's your starting quarterback.
Yeah, that would be a tremendous giveaway.
Yeah. That's how he's making the decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you're at 10.5. Bill Landis. Mm-hmm. Tim Bielik, previously so persuasive, he upped your percentage. Where are you on the Tate Martell percentage?
So I've changed my mind a million times on who I think the quarterback's going to be.
Which we've talked about, like, isn't that so interesting?
Yeah.
And I hope you guys think it's interesting. We want to sort of, like, track, and we should have done this, because I've been saying I want our Browns writers. I wanted us for the whole Browns season, from the end of the season to the draft, to do, like, Mary Kay Cabot, Dan Labbe, here's what I think they're going to do at 1-4. And, like, every week, every Monday, I wanted us to just, like, drop it. Here's what I think. Now, maybe it's the exact same. Maybe it completely changes. And it just would be a record of the evolution of your thinking. And I feel like now I wish we had gone back, and from the first day of spring practice, we had done a percent chance of, like, we'd love to do trackers. If we had done a quarterback tracker, maybe it's not too late. Maybe we can start it next week.
I think we can. We did it in 2015. Yeah. We did the hot chart or whatever we called it.
Yeah, we got to do a quarterback hot chart, because I think evolution of thought is interesting, and you've evolved in a way that's not on like on a straight path.
Yeah, no, not at all. But so I was watching on Saturday, I think. This is how I spent my weekends. On Saturday, I was watching, like, I watched every play that Dwayne Haskins took last year, every snap he took last year.
On Saturday?
Yeah.
Just to be a good journalist?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I might have been trying to get out of something. Like, I'm working. I can't take out the garbage. So anyway, I watched his plays, and I watched a little bit of Joe Burrow, and I left that video watching session thinking there was no way whatsoever that Dwayne Haskins is not the starting quarterback next year. And then we showed up on Monday, and now I don't know again, because of what Urban said about Tate Martell. So that's a long way of saying that my percentage is also going up. I think I said a 5 last time, right? Mm-hmm. 10 sounds good to me. I don't know. What was your decimal point?
10.5. It's not nearly as exact.
10.3% chance.
10 point slightly
under.
He's trying to out-precise me this time.
I just want to, when it's wrong, I could point to you and said he was more certain than I was.
Yeah. I think 20% would be too far. I think that like all of a sudden he's like got a 1 in 5 chance. I think would be too much. But do you sort of subscribe to, is part of your thinking just like the longer this goes, mm-hmm. There was a possibility that not that someone would have won the job, but that Urban Meyer was talking in a way that made it clear that there was a front runner. And then like all of a sudden it's like, well, Tate's, you know, it's like, hey man, Urban could say Dwayne Haskins came in from day one and has looked like a guy who wants to be the leader of this team and wants to be the leader of that quarterback room. I think he could have done that. Yeah. Urban could, right? Again, in the psychological thing, he could be saying that, right? And so every minute he's not increases Tate's chance 0.001%.
I don't know if that's true. Like, I feel like I'm at a ceiling right now. Like, without the evidence that we'll get from watching the spring game, I don't think I can go any higher at the moment than I am right now. And it's not because I don't think Tate's good enough. It's like the ramifications of Tate Martell being named starting quarterback are crazy. Like, you could, if he's named the starter, it's very likely that you go into the fall with 2 quarterbacks, Tate Martell and Matthew Baldwin, coming off an ACL injury.
Yeah, and Corey Curtis is a walk-on.
Oh, yeah, that guy,
too. Who all of a sudden we would be talking about.
Yeah.
So does that, does Urban Meyer have to take that into account?
I think so. How could you?
So Tate automatically has a steeper hill to get up beyond being the youngest and beyond being presumably third on the list entering it. He has an extra thing.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if we, to go down this road for a second, I suppose, like, they could go out and find a grad transfer, I guess.
Yeah.
To get a third scholarship quarterback, just for depth purposes. But that is a very precarious quarterback situation.
Right. Okay. I thought, I want to keep, like, we want to keep it Tate-centric, because we've run through a lot of things, so like, I think we talked about even last week, like, could, if Dwayne Haskins has reason to believe that, like, he's not going to be the starter in the fall, could he maybe transfer after spring? So, like, that continues to be, like, a interesting, there, you make a good point that there's slightly more than just who's the best at play here. And when we compared it to Cardale Jones, JT Barrett, there was some things there that was more at play than just who's the best, because that was past, that was looking back complications, what they'd done for the program, who they were, that kind of thing. But they didn't have looking forward complications, because JT wasn't going anywhere, because no matter what they did in 2015, you knew JT Barrett was going to be the quarterback in 2016. Mm-hmm. So JT Barrett wasn't going to go anywhere if Cardale won, and if JT won, Cardale wasn't going to go anywhere because it was his last year at Ohio State. So I hadn't really thought of it. Like, that is a complicating thing, that there's more complications moving forward with this battle in terms of setting up your quarterback room. Tate Martell as a thrower. Let's see. What did he say? He said he actually threw the ball. He threw the ball well, too. Is Tate Martell enough of a passer to be Ohio State's quarterback right now? And I say that knowing that, like, I think there may be a perception with some people, but Tate Martell threw it in high school, right? I mean, this is not a glorified running back. This guy chucked it around, right?
Yeah, you don't get to be the number two dual threat in 2017 if you don't throw the football. I mean, I looked at the rankings real quick. The only guy ranked above him in that group, that position, Tua Tagovailoa, by the way, won a national championship off the bench in the second half. So there's got to be some throwing ability there. Is it as good an arm as Dwayne Haskins? Probably not. I mean, Haskins,
yeah, that's a high bar, right?
Yeah, Haskins has the best arm of the three. I don't know if there's any way to dispute that. But again, it goes back to what I said in the video that you could see on Tuesday morning. If it's a tie, dynamics come into play. And Tate Martell has the most dynamic running ability. You wonder if that could end up possibly being a tiebreaker.
With the understanding that high school stats do not translate automatically to college stats, mm-hmm. Do you want some Tate Martell high school passing numbers?
Numbers are always a good thing, even if they're irrelevant.
His completion percentage was 60%, 393 for 652, 7,507 passing yards, which is whatever. Like, this is the more telling stat to me. 113 touchdowns, 9 interceptions.
Wow. Against
pretty good competition.
Pretty good, like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Bishop Gorman played a loaded schedule outside of their state for the last few seasons.
Yeah, like, half their schedule, like, it's weird. Like, they play a local schedule at the end of the year and kill everybody.
Yeah.
But they also haven't lost them forever. But the first half of their schedule is against the top programs in the country.
Yeah. It's a national schedule.
Yeah.
And against that, that's, I'm just doing the quick math in my head, a TD interception ratio of at least better than 11-1.
This is a man versus machine right here. Mm-hmm. Tim, because all a calculator is, frankly, is a robot.
Yep.
And Tim Bielek does not, I respect you for not giving into the robot revolution while I call up the calculator on my computer and tell you that it is 12.55555.
Oh,
so, wow. Touchdown to interception ratio. So, no offense, edge robots. You got out-roboted there. But that's really good. Like right? Like, in almost any context, that's really good.
Yeah, like that, I think that is transferable, I think, a little bit.
No, I was thinking, so we wouldn't do this as a podcast, but we could just do a Facebook Live of us watching Tate Martell highlights. And people could watch us watch Tate.
Oh, I'd do that.
Yeah, okay, we could do that like in an hour. Board.
At some point, at one point I was reporting on a J.K. Dobbins story that I still have more reporting yet to do. that I will write at some point, but part of that story is going to be me watching J.K. Dobbins' high school coach and his high school quarterback watching J.K. Dobbins' highlights in the football office at LaGrange High School, because I thought it was hilarious. Like, they knew every play. They must have watched it 1,000 times. They knew every play, when it was coming, what exactly he was going to do, and, like, we're still surprised by the stuff that he was doing.
Really?
Yeah. It was
wow, really, that's going to be a really good story.
It was really interesting to see.
You should really write that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is going to keep Urban Meyer from naming Tate Martell the starting quarterback? And I guess there's only two categories that I care about, or that we care about. That's really the question. One is somebody else is better, which is how competition works. And the other is it's close. Maybe Tate actually deserves it, but there are other, and deserves is a strong word because that brings in a lot of things. But like, let's say Tate plays the best at practice, but maybe there's like, would there be something else in terms of the other quarterback situations? He's just younger. Like, would there be, like, I mean, Tate's got a little zing-a-ding-ding. Like, that's very clear from the beginning. Do you think there'd be any chance that Urban Meyer, like, wouldn't want to name that redshirt freshman quarterback the starter? Or, and I think you mentioned this, like, if he didn't like what Tate Martell brought to the table, and that's what Tate is, dynamic runner, certainly can also throw it, and has that personality, Tate wasn't hiding anything.
No.
If he didn't like it, he wouldn't be here. So to some degree, like, well, maybe he doesn't fit, and you've mentioned this before, the crazy person Baker Mayfield Tate Martell story you wrote last year. It's like, listen, man, he is what he is, and you brought him here.
Mm-hmm.
So what will keep Tate Martell from being the starting quarterback? Is it only that Dwayne Haskins or Joe Burrow would be better? Or would there possibly be something else?
I think the roster thing that I mentioned is a big piece of it. I don't know. I still, all that, what you just said being said, I don't know really how much Urban would trust him. Like, Urban does not want a quarterback who's going to put the offense in bad situations. And that's not to say that Tate would, but you've watched his highlight tapes. You know the kind of player that he is. You know that he'll turn his back on the play and he'll try to do something crazy, maybe when the practical thing is to just, like, throw the ball away or just slide or do something. So I think there's trust yet to be earned with a redshirt freshman who he hasn't played at all in a real game in college. So if there's some growth yet to be done there, I think that's something that could keep him from winning the job, too.
Okay.
Like, we're going to AT&T Stadium to play TCU. Do I really trust this guy to do what needs to be done to win?
Right.
And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if Urban knows the answer to that.
Yeah.
In my mind, I think it's more the former of what you said, Doug, than the latter.
Just getting beat out.
Yes, because I think if it's the latter, then that's a disservice. Because if the idea for the competition is best guy plays, it's what Urban Meyer said forever. It's life in the big city. Best guy plays. It's a meritocracy. If Tate Martell's the best guy and he doesn't play, that's a disservice. And that sends a bad message to him. They're like, yeah, you're the best, but we're afraid of Joe Burrow and Dwayne Haskins possibly leaving, so you're not going to start.
Yeah.
That does not... I don't like the message that would send. And
it's kind of a lose-lose, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's unfortunate. And that's the negative in a situation where you have two highly touted guys in Dwayne Haskins and Tate Martell in the same quarterback room with a lot of eligibility left. There's always a risk that one of those guys could bolt, especially if it's Haskins bolting, if Martell wins the job. I think ultimately you have to weigh that risk in there, because ultimately there's a real possibility that these guys could be gone no matter what the situation. That there's a chance that not all three of these guys will be on the team by October, that someone will be gone regardless of the outcome.
Yeah.
So
they just need to make sure that two guys aren't gone.
Yeah, exactly. So again, it should be best guy. I mean, I understand the roster and that kind of stuff, but I think if you don't go by that, that's more roster politics than anything in my mind.
I do think it's always dangerous, and coaches say this, that the players know. I think coaches say this all the time. The guys at practice know who should win the job most of the time. So if in this world we're creating, it's like Joe and Dwayne are fine, and Tate Martell is just killing the defense, and then Tate's third, I think that's when you might create something, when guys are raising eyebrows, you know, because they see it.
Yeah.
And they see that Tate was the best guy. Why isn't Tate the quarterback? So, I don't know. I'm surprised we're talking about him, but I feel, again, we're not in the business of this. This is not like our MO to like just, we want to be interesting, yeah. But we're not making stuff up. This isn't, we're not Skip Bayless-ing Tate Martell here. This is based on, yeah. You're Stephen A. because you're from Philly.
That's right. Congratulations. He's from New York, though.
We'll finish up Tate Martell. Can you give us a 30 to 60 second explanation of why Villanova is not in Philadelphia?
Because cities have designated borders, and Villanova is outside of Philadelphia's.
Is Villanova in the Philadelphia metro complex?
Yeah, probably. It's in, like, so Philadelphia is Philadelphia, like, it's its own county.
Okay.
Villanova is in Delaware County.
Okay.
So, like, I don't know, probably, but do you really need to expand the metroplex for a city that already has 2 million people in it?
Is there something beyond geographical county lines that would make you or would make a true Philadelphian say Villanova's not in Philadelphia?
Yeah, like the general we're better than you kind of attitude that comes with anybody from the main line.
Yeah.
Which is where all the rich people outside of Philadelphia live.
And so is Villanova on the main line? Or
I think like not... Yeah, maybe not technically, but like adjacent.
Yeah. And so now give us a 20-second explanation of the main line, because that's like a Philadelphia phrase that people...
Yeah, it's like it's right on the border, right outside the city, and it's just like there's a bunch of mansions. It's like where Allen Iverson lived.
Yeah.
When he was at the top of his game. Now he lives somewhere else.
Okay.
But, yeah. Mansions and rich people, and like they look down upon the city.
Yeah.
And make you feel lesser than.
Yeah, and Villanova is their school.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. What are the colleges that are Philly? Temple?
Temple, St. Joe's, Drexel, LaSalle, and then Penn is like Ivy League, but it's Philly. Penn's Philly.
Yeah. Because
it's the Palestra.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's the best place to watch college basketball.
Do you just sort of like shrug at Villanova, or do you like dislike Villanova?
I mostly say the things I say about Villanova to just like get a rise out of people.
Yeah.
I don't actually hate Villanova because I don't have any reason to.
Are there people in Philly who hate Villanova?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
like Temple fans will talk your ear off about how Villanova is not in Philadelphia.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Tate Martell is going to be Ohio State's starting quarterback. And thanks for joining us on Facebook Live. No. I am excited for the spring game. Shouldn't people be excited for the spring game?
Yeah, but I think it's going to rain.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you see a 10-day forecast?
Oh.
Look at you being a journalist. You're looking at Dwayne Haskins' plays and doing a 10-day forecast for the spring game.
Yeah, because I feel like it's always nice.
Yeah, it's been really nice a couple years.
Well, there was a year, I think it was like 2010 or 2011, where like the second half of the spring game was suspended by a thunderstorm.
Hey! Did you see this comment?
Yeah.
Our guy Jerry Emig from Ohio State Sports Information, former SID at Temple, worked with John Chaney, is checking in about Philadelphia.
He knows Villanova's not in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Yeah. I am really, really looking forward to the spring game. And I'm also curious, like, how they'll divide the quarterbacks.
Yeah, because it's not... Usually the way they split it up was, like, this team is, like, it's the first team offense and second team defense are on one team.
Right? Yeah, kind of, yeah.
So I don't know, like, it'll be Haskins on the starter for one team and Burrow the starter for the other.
You would think, but do you also want them both to kind of get some looks against
But I think they did, I also, now that I'm thinking about it, I think they actually didn't adhere to that last year. Because wasn't there a drive where it was like, Dwayne Haskins took him down to the 30, and then Joe Burrow, who was technically on the other team,
yeah.
Came in and then threw a touchdown pass.
And also, again, there's going to be guys who don't play. Like, it's like, well, you want to see him against this, but like, maybe Nick Bosa's not going to play that much, or maybe Draymond Jones isn't going to play that much.
What if he doesn't play any of the quarterbacks? Just the Corey Curtis show. By the way, because I got into a brief Twitter discussion about this. Someone else had put this out there in a Twitter. When you were a child playing football on the street with
your
friends,
I saw that
one person was the quarterback for both teams, what did you call that person?
Yeah. All-time quarterback.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to know if you were wrong, and you are.
Would you call it Steady Quarterback?
Steady Q. Yeah.
Steady Q? Steady Q. Is that your rap name? Yeah. I have also decided, the other thing I decided is, and I wonder like if there's like a 2% chance of like being able to do this. So I saw Hamilton over last week, and I want to write a hip-hop musical about Tate Martell.
He probably has a draft. You could just like punch up a little
bit. He's like, here's it. It's just, we've been working on it. Yeah. So I wonder, like, yeah, because there's the like the beginning of the. I mean, I know Hamilton's been around for 3 years, and like I just discovered it. But there's like a beginning of like a da 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 da, and like I'm like trying to find some words. How does a 5'10" quarterback from Las Vegas? Like I'm getting like a little bit, and then like if we dropped it. If we like could do a little video and like drop that right before the spring game,
yeah, we can get we can get what's his name there to rap it for us,
Mekadon,
yeah.
So we'll work on that. Okay, now people are checking in. Now it's like it's confusing. We're doing the podcast because we're here for the podcast people, but we have people checking in live on Facebook Live with real time interaction. And interaction is great, but it's also like confusing, sort of. That's the Tate Martell discussion. Listen, I think it's going to – we have like the rest of this week, and then we get Urban next Monday, and there'll be more quarterback talk, and then there's no more availability. They're finishing up practices next week, and then it's the spring game. So, like, there's not a lot more that we're going to hear from them, but it's going to be a really interesting spring game, and I think the one thing is – let's finish with this on this topic. Like, did you think there was a pretty decent chance that sort of Ohio State was going to have a quarterback on April 15th?
Yeah.
Like a starting quarterback? Like did you coming into spring? And then like now what do you think?
Yes, I did. I was actually pretty – and it was more – like I wrote the story at the beginning of the spring. Like they owed Joe Burrow an answer. But I also just thought like it was Haskins' job. So like why delay the inevitable?
Yeah.
And now, no, I don't think that at all. I don't think they'll have a starting quarterback after spring.
Yeah, and is that a problem? Or is that just, you know what, we continue. Guys do 7-on-7s all summer. They work. They show their leadership. You get them in preseason, and you continue the battle. And as long as you're settled by opening day, that's fine. Or would there have been a definite advantage to finding an answer in April?
I think there would be an advantage, but not so much so that I think it's a terrible thing if you don't have one. I think as long as they do right by Joe Burrow and lay everything out for him, and he can do with that information whatever he chooses, then I think they're okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of 100% in agreement with Bill there.
Yeah. DeLillo just said this really takes the mystique away.
I was nervous about that.
Yeah. We do. This is sausage making. This is live, and this is some sausage. This is a sausage fest in my basement, and that's Buckeye Talk. We'll take a break on Buckeye Talk and be back with recruiting, Easter candy, a Michigan question, and your questions. And we're also going to say goodbye on Facebook Live. Thanks to you guys for listening to Buckeye Talk. Did you know that 1 in 6 Northeast Ohioans struggle with hunger? Many people in Northeast Ohio are forced to make tough choices. Unexpected expenses, prescription costs, rising heat costs, those are all things that can prevent people from being able to put food on the table. That can often result in hunger, but this is where you can help. Each dollar that you donate to the Harvest for Hunger campaign will result in 4 meals for hungry people in Northeast Ohio. So right now, go to harvestforhunger.org and donate. That's harvestforhunger.org. Help feed your neighbors. Cleveland.com is a sponsor of the Greater Cleveland Food Bank's Harvest for Hunger campaign. Welcome back to Buckeye Talk. We're off Facebook Live, so we can finally relax and be ourselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Be the Tim, Bill, and Doug that you've come to groan and love, not put on airs for a TV audience.
Tim took his pants off.
Pantsless Tim Bielik, Garrett Wilson.
Yes.
What's up?
Well,
I only know his name. I don't know anything else about him.
Well, here's what I'll tell you about Garrett Wilson right now. He's a top 50 player in the country right now. He actually shot up in the rankings from a couple weeks ago, so he's top 50 right now. He's the number 6 receiver in the country, and it looks as if his recruitment is coming down to just Ohio State and Texas. So how it's going to work with Garrett Wilson, plays at Lake Travis, which is Matthew Baldwin's high school. The two were teammates together last year when they reached the state championship game, lost to Allen, I believe, in the final game. But Wilson tweeted out late Saturday night that he's got official visits scheduled to Ohio State the weekend of the spring game and Texas the weekend after.
Is that for Texas' spring game?
I don't know the answer to that.
I'm not sure.
Let me look that up. Or like, did Ohio State win like the spring game battle?
Not sure, but the most important thing he says, quote, I'll announce my commitment shortly after, referring, of course, to the second visit.
Texas's spring game is the week after, so that means he'll be at Ohio State's spring game and Texas's spring game. So it's down to those two. He's a receiver.
Yep.
Like, Bill, you did Matthew Baldwin stuff. Is that like his guy?
That's yeah.
Like his go-to guy?
He's their best receiver, yeah. Yeah.
Do they...
He's really good.
From your conversations from Matthew Baldwin, do you have any... like how? How would you characterize their relationship?
Yeah, they seem pretty tight. I think they're pretty good friends, as you might expect for receiver and quarterback. I'm trying to remember. I think when I met with Matthew Baldwin, I think he said like he talked to Garrett Wilson a little bit about like what Ohio's like and what Columbus is like, because Garrett Wilson is from Dublin. So they're close, and I think that matters in this recruitment.
So what number is he? He's in the top 50, Tim?
Yeah, he's number 46 overall, number 6 wide receiver.
Height and weight. What's his height and weight?
6 foot tall, 185 pounds.
So in the 2018 recruiting class that just was completed, which was Tom Herman's like first real shot at pulling together a Texas class, because the year before was the year when Ohio State like recruited all the best players in Texas and got them. In 2018, Ohio State, according to the 247 rankings, had the second-ranked recruiting class, and Texas was third. Ohio State had 3 5-stars and 20 4-stars. Texas had 2 5-stars and 17 4-stars. Texas also did very well in the state of Texas. In that class, In the 2018 class, Texas's 4 top players. They had 4 top 100 players in the 2018 class. All of them were from Texas. They got the number 1 kid in Texas, the number 2 kid in Texas, the number 6 kid, and the number 7 kid. And that number 7 kid was Anthony Cook, a corner, who, Bill, you said they beat Ohio State head-to-head for Anthony Cook, right?
Yep.
And also, looking down a little further on the list, number 4 and number 5 in Texas as well. And I did the math on this. Tom Herman brought in 7 of the top 10 players from Texas in 2018 compared to none the year before.
Is that math?
That is some math.
Don't brag about doing the math when you count it to 7 and count it to 0.
Well, no, but that's the next level research I do for Cleveland.com.
Nice.
Did the math on this.
And Ohio State didn't... Did they have no Texas kids in the 18 class?
Just Baldwin.
Just Matt Baldwin.
Who is not even...
It's like the number 40-something.
Yeah, somewhere in the 40s. I mean, if you want to count Antoine Jackson...
43.
If you want to count Antoine Jackson because he went to Blinn in Brenham, go right ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to count that. So Texas in the 2018 class got 10 of the top 13. And the other kids, 2 went to A&M and 1 went to Alabama. So what we're talking about here is... Anthony Cook, that was a head-to-head battle. This is a head-to-head battle. How big of a deal is it for Ohio State to get a kid like this? Or is this just sort of like, you know what? Like, this is going to be like our last shot in Texas for a little bit because this kid is Baldwin's receiver. We got Baldwin. But is Ohio State going to basically end up seeding Texas back to Texas because it's not worth the head-to-head fights and not worth the investment when Texas probably is going to win those fights when they have a good coach and a good recruiter in charge? Is this the end of Ohio State recruiting Texas?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's not the only guy. Grant Gunnell is like their top quarterback prospect, and he's from Houston. No, I don't think they're... I don't know if there will be a time where Urban Meyer is not recruiting Texas. Maybe allocate less resources, pick your spots a little more, but they're still going to go down there. It's been too good to them to not go down there.
But it was good to them when, like, Charlie Strong was
sure,
there.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to ignore that fact, but...
You would still go?
As the numbers in Ohio remain inconsistent, you have to go other places.
Right.
Where are you going to go? Like, why would you not go to Texas? You have to take a swing at Texas. You can't. I don't think you can ignore it.
Yeah, you can't be intimidated, I think, by Tom Herman, Texas. Just like you can't go away from Georgia because Kirby Smart's there. You can't go away from Florida because you have FSU, Florida, Miami all there. You just have to be willing to take your shots in those big states.
There are people, but like there's a couple different spots where, and we've talked about this a lot, and I love talking about it, like finding the weak spots and attacking, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So Texas was a weak spot for a while. Tom Herman, with the way he's recruiting at the moment, is certainly stronger than Texas was with Charlie Strong, right?
Yep.
And stronger than Texas was at the end of Mack Brown. Mm-hmm. Georgia with Kirby Smart, much stronger than with Mark Richt, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Florida with Dan Mullen, that's going to be stronger than it was with McElwain or Will Muschamp, I guess, right?
Yep.
Willie Taggart at Florida State, right? Jimbo Fisher was good there. He won a lot there. I think Willie Taggart recruiting is going to be stronger than Jimbo Fisher was.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, when Taggart came into FSU, that class shot up a lot after between the early signing period and the official signing day in February.
Tennessee was a cluster for a couple years. Butch Jones is out. What's the guy's name?
Jeremy Pruitt.
Jeremy Pruitt is in. We don't know. Jeremy Pruitt's not like a sure thing hire, but he was Alabama's defensive coordinator. They might get better. LSU, who's the coach at LSU? Is it still Coach O?
Yeah, it's Coach O still.
I wonder, like, is that, I don't know. Don't they have to find spots? Texas, Georgia, and Florida are harder to recruit in for Ohio State or for any good outside team trying to come in and get top 10 kids in that state. It's now harder for Ohio State to get top 10 kids in Texas, Georgia, and Florida than it was 3 years ago.
Sure.
That's just a true fact, right?
Yes.
So what should they do?
Where else do you go? I don't like...
Yeah, should they go to Louisiana?
No. Kids don't leave Louisiana.
They haven't. Well, but if they think the program's falling apart. Kids didn't used to leave Texas either. And then they left in droves. Baron Browning, Jeffrey Okuda, and J.K. Dobbins should not be here. You couldn't go get... Why couldn't you go get the Baron Browning of Louisiana?
I would love to know the... And I don't have time to do it, and I probably won't do it. But Ari and I went to Louisiana when we did our road trip after the national title game and wrote about how kids don't leave Louisiana. But look at the top players from the state of Louisiana, and you'll see a lot of LSU logos next to their names. They just don't leave. Good or bad, they go to LSU.
I actually did look this up for a roundup I did with a Louisiana receiver. I'm forgetting the name off the top of his head who had Ohio State like in his top 10, top 12. I think if the numbers were better, I think in 2016, as far as, you know, Louisiana, LSU just dominating Louisiana with Les Miles, it's not necessarily the same now as it was then. Like, LSU can still get whichever guys they basically want out of Louisiana, but not all of them are sticking around.
I just want to look and see. 2018 class. I forgot that two weird kids went to Kansas. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the top 10, including the top 2 from Louisiana, went to LSU.
How many again?
5 of the top 10, both in the top 2.
And in the 2019 class, only 2 of the top 13 are committed, and they're both committed to LSU. But everybody else is out there. I don't know, but you've got to...
But the states you mentioned are too, like, they're so deep. The 13th best player in Texas is still going worth going after.
Yeah, but Jeffrey Okuda and Baron Browning and J.K. Dobbins weren't the 13th best player in Texas, right?
Yeah, but now I feel like you're asking two different questions.
Well, I guess one of my things is they built, so their 2017 recruiting class, also, where also is it probably harder to get kids, maybe? Maybe we'll have to see. Maryland.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe.
If Maryland's more competitive. Yeah. But so the 2017 class, which was we wrote and talked a million times, like, this is it. This is Urban Meyer at peak recruiting. It's the best Ohio State class ever. And then 2018 was basically just as good. But that was built on, like, the back of Texas kids. Not just good Texas kids, the best kids from Texas allowed Ohio State to have its best recruiting class ever. If that were right now, they would not get those kids. So what are they going to do? That's my question.
It's just a... I mean, there's going to be those kids in the state that, like, aren't loyal to those in-state schools. They're always out there. I mean, that's been the case forever, you know. Just because you're in Texas doesn't mean you're going to go either to UT or to
Yes, it does. We can't pretend that that was not... That was an outlier year that was directly related to Texas sucking. 100%, right? I mean, that's what happened. And Ohio State took advantage of it. And they, at other times, had taken advantage of the fact that Georgia couldn't keep the best kids in Georgia home. Now they are. I'm just asking what they're going to do. Because this is what they do. We have proof this is what they do. So the 2017 class... Texas didn't get a kid. I mean, I guess the highest ranked kid from Texas who went to Texas in the class of 2017 was the number 19 kid.
Yeah.
And then the next class, Tom Herman got 7 of the top 10. So it's just, I don't mean to have like panic in my voice. I'm just saying, like, this is a thing. Where should they go? Now, Vegas, they went to Vegas. I think Bishop Gorman is a little bit of a reaction to, okay, if, you know, if Georgia's going to get better or Florida's going to get better, Texas is going to get better, where can we go? Let's try Vegas. I think that's maybe part of it. Do they try more in California?
I don't know. California's tough.
But
it's far away.
Because it is not about getting... I mean, it can be, but it's not about getting the 16th best kid in Texas. Like, it really helps if you can get one of the top five kids in
Texas. I think you are seeing them, and it could just be coincidence, but you are seeing them identify, like, these random top 100 players that pop up in places where they normally don't pop up, like New York City or Long Island, New York, where they got Jeremy Ruckert from, or Pocatello, Idaho, where they got Tommy Togiai.
Right.
Tulsa, Oklahoma, where Josh Proctor's from and where Daxon Hill's from, who's probably their top safety target in this class, who's a five-star kid. So they are doing that. I don't disagree that, like, now if J.K. Dobbins existed in this recruiting class, it would be tougher to get him, I suppose. It would be. But it's not – I think they still have to try. I don't like, – and maybe you try and you fail, but you can't not – recruit the top players in Texas and Georgia and Florida because now it's all of a sudden more difficult. If you want to compete on the level on which Ohio State wants to compete, you have to go into those areas to try to get those players.
Well, if I may, one area that I've actually noted in my recruiting roundups that if you follow trends lately and where guys are kind of making lists, center in on St. Louis. Because I wrote about this, I believe it was about a week and a half ago, that Ohio State has made cutdowns on lists of four separate players from the St. Louis area, including four-star receiver Marcus Washington, who is, as I'm trying to get this loaded up on my offer list, he is the number 11 receiver, 62 overall player. So he has Ohio State in his top 10. They've also made cutdowns for four-star receiver Jamison Williams, four-star safety Jelani Williams, and four-star inside linebacker Shamon Cooper. And this is after they signed two receivers from St. Louis in 2018, and Cameron Babb and Cameron Brown. So I don't know how many of those guys they're going to pull out of St. Louis, but it's clear that they're looking at St. Louis right now. It seems to be a good year for those prospects. And hey, St. Louis is where you got Zeke Elliott. Why not try and tap into some of that magic again?
I love when I'm screaming, and then there's an answer.
They go into Tennessee. Like they find their spots.
But that's interesting. Like,
yeah, but I also like, and I think that's good information. Ohio State's on everyone's list. Like, I don't know if using a kid trimming his list, including Ohio State, is a good indication of where Ohio State is trying to get kids. Because
every kid
in the country who makes a top 15 has Ohio State on it, whether or not they have it.
What are these kids? What lists were these? Top five or top 10?
Top eights, top tens. I think one's like you said, one's nothing, but four is pretty.
Yeah, I'm not trying to discredit that. I just think of like looking at lists as an indication of anything can be.
Well, of course, it's still early,
but I think like that makes me like wonder like. Like, we should probably call St. Louis and see, like, call some of these schools and say, like, is Ohio State seem to be giving you guys more attention? Or no?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is no. It's an area they've always, when I think when there are players there, they go there.
And, like, the New York thing, like, that they are in sort of like a Curtis Samuel school now a little bit, right?
Yeah, whenever Erasmus Hall has a kid, I feel pretty confident that kid's going to Ohio State.
Yeah, and, like, to get Rucker out of New York, like, if they say, like, listen, there's not a million kids in New York, but we want to be... We want to be the school that when there's a top 100 player in the state of New York, his first inclination is to go to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a thing.
Yep. So I'm just looking at the Missouri list. Marcus Washington is number two in the state. And then you have Shamon Cooper, Jameson Williams, and Jelani Williams, 5, 6, and 7, respectively. And Shamon Cooper and Marcus Washington are teammates at Trinity Catholic, along with 5-star athlete Isaiah Williams, who's also committed to Illinois.
For now. That's interesting. Like, I think, like, could we talk about this all the time? And we've done, I don't know, but like the hotbeds. Like, we talk about, like, the hotbeds. What are the hotbeds? And it's like Bishop Gorman became a hotbed. And we know.
It was weird. Like, it came and went, though. Like, they just, it was that one class and that was it.
They're not back hitting it hard, or is it, do they not have as many kids? I don't know.
I can't imagine the reason is they don't have kids. Like, I don't know what the class looks like, but they have to have kids.
Yeah.
But no, they got the guys in 17. They got Martell, they got Haskell Garrett, they had Tyjon Lindsey, and then they lost them.
Right.
And then they went after the linebacker. I'm not going to try to say his name.
But you were good at saying his name.
Yeah, but I think after that I learned I was saying it wrong.
What? For real?
Yeah.
Someone email you?
I heard someone else say his name.
Ah.
He went to USC, but yeah, as far as I know, like it was that. But then it was also like they got Tate Martell because his granddad went to Ohio State.
Yeah.
So there's always like they're going after Garrett Wilson because Garrett Wilson is from Columbus.
So
those things always pop up.
Yeah. What? Garrett Wilson's from Columbus, the Texas receiver?
He's from Dublin, Ohio.
Yeah, he lived in Dublin for a while, then moved down.
Did we mention that yet?
Yeah, well, I think you said it, yeah.
Yeah, you, Bill
I was thrown off by Facebook. That's why he's looking here?
Yeah.
Oh, they're going to get him. They get those kids. That's who they get.
Yeah. That. Getting back to Wilson specifically, I think this is going to be an interesting battle between matchups and connections. I mean proximity and connections. I mean, I did a Google Maps thing. Lake Travis is like 21 miles from the University of Texas campus versus the connections of Garrett Wilson to Matthew Baldwin. Garrett Wilson being originally an Ohio kid, it's going to be interesting to see where that weighs out. And even looking at the recruiting rankings itself, I've written about this several times. Ohio State is prioritizing receiver. They're hammering receiver out on the recruiting trail right now.
They need to.
They've offered 25, and three of the top five are committed, and they're not going to get Theo Weiss. He left Ohio State out of his top five the other day.
Also from Texas.
Yes. So this is their best shot. This could be kind of all hands on deck type recruiting situation to get him. Plus, Jalen Curry from Houston, Texas, another 4-star kid from Texas, top 100. Grant Cannell's teammate is also an interesting prospect to watch out of Texas.
Theo Weiss is from Allen, right?
Yeah, he's. I think Grant Tisdale's.
Yeah, it's funny. Like Grant Tisdale at the time was Ohio State's, looked like the kid who was going to be Ohio State's quarterback in this class. Now he's not. And his 5-star receiver teammate looked like for a minute he might be in his class, and now he's not. So now they're recruiting the teammate of Matthew Baldwin and the teammate of the kid who's their top quarterback prospect in 2019.
Really?
Yeah.
See, remember I said we're going to like do a better job of writing down things we say in the podcast for stories. Recruiting teammates, especially quarterback receiver combos.
Mm. You guys like combos?
No. Have we talked about pizza combos?
No, I don't think so.
Do you like, first you guys, do you
no,
like
combos? No, I don't like combos. Never got into them.
Not at all.
Across the board, no.
No. Really? I have my, and I, like, we could, I could, we might be on 20-minute food, man. Pizza combos are my number one love-hate food. That within the bite, and these are the ones that have pretzels on the outside.
Yeah.
Because, like, the regular wrap looks like a dog biscuit to me.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. That's why I didn't like them.
They're called snossages. We used to definitely get things called snossages that were that size of like a little combo, and it's like you didn't know the difference.
Yeah.
Pizza combos within the consumption of an individual combo, I both love it and hate it from taste to taste. Like it's that it's just a weird. You know what I mean? It's like it's a pizza combo. It's not pizza.
Yeah.
It's some thing of like in a lab they put. 9 different chemicals together, and they're like, this chemical kind of tastes like pizza. Let's shove it in a pretzel. So I am sort of like addicted to them. It's almost like if you like if you ever had a person that you were like in love with, but they were terrible for you. You know, like yeah. The kind of person like, oh, that you break up with like 10 times. You date, you break up, you date. You can't stay away from each other, but you know it's a toxic relationship. That's my relationship with pizza combos. But I love to get them on a road trip and get the little snack size pack because then it's just like a quick little – it's like a quickie. It's not like – you're not actually going out again for like a month or anything. It's just like a little one-time thing. You pull in the gas station, have a quickie with your miniature pack of pizza combos and get on with your life.
And you go to jail.
And then you just think back and you think like, oh, those pizza combos, like – they were so good, but they were so terrible. I hated it, but I loved it. And it's one of the most unique experiences in my life is my relationship with pizza combos.
Do you think if they called them quickies, people would buy them more?
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, of the things that we could do, I think we could market food to people.
Yeah.
Because it's not really about the food and how it tastes. It's how you sell it to people the right way.
Yeah.
Need a quickie? Right?
Yeah.
Like,
people would buy that.
Yeah. I can imagine, if, you know, like the quality of like the 5-hour energy commercials that are like that weird, it looks like a commercial that someone made for like a TV class.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That they just learned how to use a camera for the first time. And it's like, hey guys, I could use a boost. And it's like 5 hours, like that kind of style, like a pizza combos thing. Hey guys, need a quickie? And it's like, yeah, here you go, pizza combos. Pizza quickies.
Pizza quickies.
So do we think in the end, let's do predictions because we'd like to do predictions. I will, recuse myself because I don't even know what the guy's name is. Are they going to get this kid? Yes or no?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I agree. I think in my opinion, recruiting comes down to connections. Like I mentioned, you know, the teammate thing, the fact that he's from Columbus, and the fact that Ohio State is prioritized receiver, they're going to go all in on this kid, I would imagine. It's spring game weekend, do everything they can to try and make a good impression.
He should just play. Throw him out there. That's the ultimate visit.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
What was your experience like while I played?
Yeah.
Hey,
did you do that?
I mean, yeah. South Carolina got Steve Spurrier on the field for their spring game. Granted, he dropped a wide-open touchdown pass and fell down.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I mean, and then it's going to be like, I know someone's going to be like, Urban, how did you get this kid? He's going to be like, his grandma lives down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the magic. It's like, oh, well, grandma. I mean, like,
so Ohio State's secret.
Yeah. Kids from faraway places who are actually from here is a magic, along with like hotbeds and like, but like, that's like a magic. Okay. Do a column. This would be like, you know, like one of those where it's like a chart. Where you have like 8 different categories, and then you put a person's name, and then you put a dot in like each category that they qualify for.
Yeah.
So like if we did every out-of-state kid that was like, and it was like, has a family connection to Ohio, like had a favorite player as a kid that was a Buckeye, said that are like liked Urban Meyer, you know what I mean?
Florida, yeah.
And did like came from a school where Ohio State has recruited before and landed a player, and like see like how many kids like as we go through each class of every out of state kid,
yeah,
who matches up, and maybe I'm trying to think like what else it would be, and it's like I bet you we could come up with like 6 categories that would at least one thing would apply to every guy in the class.
Yeah. Do you think if we made up that thing and distributed it to Ohio State, they would have every player fill it out and give it back to us?
Ask Jerry to distribute chart about recruiting. I want to ask this question before we get to questions from other people and before we get to the peeps. There was a popular thing that I saw multiple people mention around the national championship game for basketball, which is that both Jay Wright And actually, I have two things now. Forgot one. Both Jay Wright and John Beilein were not immediate blockbuster successes at their school, and people were using them as examples of, hey, if you, lots of schools like fire coaches after 3 years, and if you had done that with John Beilein and Jay Wright, they both would be gone, but instead they were allowed to sort of work things out, and now look where they are. Jay Wright in his first 3 years was 19-13, 15-16, and 18-17. John Beilein in his first 3 years was 10-22, 21-14, and 15-17. So here's the thing. And I also saw at least one tweet along the lines of, boy, like, you have to respect Michigan's John Beilein. He's a great coach. Michigan deserves their basketball success. Thank God Michigan football doesn't have a coach as good as John Beilein. Jim Harbaugh has been here 3 years.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
John Beilein in his first 3 years was 46-53. He finished 9th, 7th, and 7th in the Big Ten. Jim Harbaugh is 28-11, and he finished 3rd, 3rd, and 4th in his divisions. Which is, so both of them were in the middle of the pack, middle bottom of pack, like not one of the best six teams in the league. Should we not apply, if you believe in the, hey, why do we live in this instantaneous gratification world where coaches don't get any time, and if you stick with a good coach that you believe in, there will be a payoff. Isn't that Jim Harbaugh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, why is everybody up his butt?
Is everybody up his butt?
Is everybody up? Writing down things. Well, is everybody up Jim Harbaugh's butt?
Well, I mean, Paul Feinbaum certainly is.
Yes, say the thing about Paul Feinbaum, which was the breakfast today.
Yes, well, admittedly, I stumbled upon this, like, 9:30 on Monday night while the national championship game's going on. He appeared on a Birmingham, Alabama radio station, as he does weekly, as I pull up the story. So he appears on this radio station, and I'll preface this. He has gone after Jim Harbaugh before, and last season said that Urban Meyer basically owns him. So on this...
Really went on a limit that one, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but basically here's a little bit what basically snippets of what he said. Quote, let's be honest, his hiring has been a colossal failure so far, close quote. And he said that Harbaugh's, quote, a fish out of water in college football. And this is only after 3 seasons, and...
He's up his butt. That's who's up his butt.
Yeah, but Paul Feinbaum likes the sound of his own voice. And like a lot of people, I do.
And but I will defend the anti-Feinbaum thing when he says the Big Ten, quote, faded away. That when you consider a conference that only lost one bowl game all season.
So, yeah, I mean, he clearly is an anti-Big Ten guy. That's like part of his shtick.
Yeah.
You think he's ever been in the state of Michigan? Does he come north of Tennessee?
No, he adheres to Alabama's scheduling policy.
That is a good question.
Although, did you see that, by the way, that Alabama is like looking now to schedule home and homes with some people?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I think they were looking at Texas, I believe, and Notre Dame. So that would be like two former national championship game opponents they beat would be their opponents later on in the future. I think that's like...
Yeah.
They haven't scheduled that, but I believe, it, to the best of my memory, they're talking about it.
I'll believe it when I see it. Saban was quoted on a radio show. I'm reading this off Land of Ten, off SEC Country. But he was on his radio show, like, this week, or last week. He said, I would like to do a home-and-home. We played Penn State home-and-home when I was here, and it was a good game here, it was a good game there. That was in 2010 and 2011, and they haven't done one since. And so they're talking about it, but like, I don't believe it. Like, I don't believe it either. I don't believe.
They play two pretty bad Penn State teams.
Right. So like Nick Saban's scheduling genius. Like he's looking for the fraud of
Yeah. He played. Rob Bolden was like a freshman starter in the game. I think in State College.
Really?
Yeah. It was like, it just so happened that Penn State ended up on Alabama's schedule the year after, like, Darryl Clark and all those guys went to the Rose Bowl and lost to USC.
Right.
Interesting how that works.
Yeah. So I don't actually think that's going to happen. But so anyway, so I just thought it was Like, do you guys, because I think you have to be consistent. You have to either say, like, you know what? Like, if a guy, if you hire a good coach that you believe in, and he's not great after 3 years, you've got to stick with him because there's light at the end of the tunnel. Now, sometimes you hire a disaster,
yeah,
and you're like, oh my God, we whiffed. Get him out of there. But like Jay Wright and John Beilein and Jim Harbaugh, nobody's saying like, oh, that's a whiff, get him out of there. But like, do you believe that 3 seasons, and if you aren't inheriting, because most coaches inherit a team that's down. Mm-hmm. Now, as long as you're not inheriting like a program that was socked by NCAA sanctions and like can't compete, but if you're just inheriting like a good program that's on hard times, can you get a gauge in 3 years? Is that a fair time to assess a guy, or is that too fast? And that Jay Wright and John Beilein should not have been judged after 3 years, and then Jim Harbaugh shouldn't.
Like, I don't know if there's a universal answer to that question, yes or no. But I probably tend toward 3 years is not enough time. I don't know. In certain cases, it is. But Harbaugh's got a decent track record that I would not label his tenure in Michigan a disaster after 3 years, because I know what he's done in the past.
Yeah.
What he did at Stanford, what he did in the NFL. Like, the guy can coach football. He's a weirdo, but he can coach football.
Right.
So, no, I would not. And also, like, he's not a fish out of water at Michigan.
Right.
Like, if you wanted to, I think he's like a fish out of water just like in society. So if that's what you want to use to label him as a disaster, like he's got no shot to be successful at anything.
Right.
So no, I think we've talked about this before, that I think, I don't know, like we're not in Ann Arbor, so I don't know what the vibe on Harbaugh is in Ann Arbor, but I think a lot of our viewpoint on Jim Harbaugh is like fueled by what the viewpoint of him is in Columbus,
right?
Which is like he's a loser,
right?
He can't beat Urban Meyer,
right?
Which I think is the wrong way to look at it,
right?
So no, that's my long way of saying that I don't think you can make 100% total. What's the word I'm looking for?
Sweeping
conclusions about Jim Harbaugh after 3 years.
Okay,
yeah. On a side note, the Michigan's All or Nothing series on Amazon premieres Friday, so I'm going to watch that. I'm curious to see what Jim Harbaugh is like on that, to really get an even better idea of what he's like. I'm fascinated to watch that.
Has there been anything coming out of Michigan that like the players don't like playing for him?
No.
And
don't
you think there would have been by now?
You would think so.
No,
like, Wilton Spade is like considering going back, isn't he?
Right.
Yeah, he's going to go back if Patterson, from what I read, he could be going back if Patterson is not eligible this season.
Oh, for real?
Like, yeah, I think that's the deal.
Do we think Patterson's going to be eligible?
I don't know. Like,
there hadn't been an indication either way. Ole Miss, the way it works was Michigan sent their appeal and Ole Miss filed a response, but as far as I know, no one knows what the feedback of the response has been. It's like they approve it or if they are opposed to it. We have no idea. All I know is Ole Miss has filed a response to Michigan's appeal, and that's basically the end of it. And now it's on the NCAA to decide one way or the other.
And we think if Michigan has Shea Patterson, they can like contend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's the missing piece, and if he like this is a huge deal. This is something that like Ohio State fans should be very interested in.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like Michigan's had the defensive pieces for the last couple seasons. What's missing is the quarterback.
Yeah. Okay. Last point I want to make about giving coaches a shot. And why am I making this point? Because I feel like it. Jay Wright and Villanova have, in the last 5 years, they've gone 29-5, 33-3, 35-5, 32-4, 36-4. Okay. Villanova didn't win their conference this year. I didn't realize that. But they won 4 straight conference titles and finished 2nd this year. They have been a dominant team, right?
Yep.
And the previous 4 years to this run, okay? So the last 5 years for Villanova has been as good as any program in the country. 2 national titles, and the other 3 years they won their first NCAA game and then lost.
Yep.
Excellent program.
Crying flute girl.
Who they showed again?
I don't think it was her. I think it was just someone who looked
all the her. Flute players at Villanova yeah. looked the same.
Yeah.
Did you see, by the way, that Joey Lane was in One Shining Moment?
I don't watch One Shining Moment because I think it's dumb.
That is the least surprising thing ever.
I want to drop a hot take. I think maybe this is me as a hockey person, but I feel like the playoff montages that they used to show on Canada that are on YouTube are
Boo!
One Shining Moment out of the water.
We are not. The phrase
I shouldn't say it's
hockey too, montage can never be said on this podcast
like a
again.
Playoff montage, fine.
Yeah, that's wrong.
I don't.
I shouldn't say it's. I just like. I don't care. It's not stupid. If you like it, like you are not stupid for liking it. But I could not care less.
I completely agree.
But you like. But so you are anti celebratory wrap up montage.
Yeah, like it's just like I watched the tournament. I know what happened. It's not like it happened a year ago. Like I don't need to be reminded of what happened in the previous 3 weeks.
But what about it's set to music?
Yeah, it's set to a bad song.
So you
they should change it and like set it to Migos or something. Then I'd watch it.
To Stir Fry.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only Migos song I know. At the Easter buffet, my teenager took a picture of the Stir Fry that she was eating and then played Stir Fry and made that like an Instagram post.
That's good social media.
Tim, are you pro or con celebratory sports montage?
I'm pro, especially if the music has to be good though.
So does the hockey montage have a song? Je suis un free fromage you like
like any of the ones I've seen are like, you know, a Rolling Stones song. They've had U2 on there. The one is like, I think, a Queen song called The Show Must Go On, which I think was written by Freddie Mercury a few weeks before he died. It's a really good song.
So you think that we should change the basketball one to that? Okay, so you're anti-montage. You just think the hockey montage is better than One Shining Moment.
Yeah. I mean, I want the music to do something for me a little bit. I get the appeal of One Shining Moment. People love it. I'm cool with it. It's just, I prefer something a little different.
So, Kata Bates-Diop was in it, making a jump shot. Then Joey Lane was in it, walk on Joey Lane, like pumping his fist right after that. And right at the beginning, Brutus was in it for one second. So those were the three things. I don't know if Joey Lane, people were talking about Joey Lane making it. I didn't see if he, did he tweet about making?
Yeah,
was he excited?
Yeah. Yeah. He became a Twitter celebrity for about 5 minutes.
He's really good at social media.
He is really good at social media. We should have him on the podcast. He would come on
for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, let's do that. That's a good reminder. Here's my other question. Jay Wright, in the 4 years at Villanova, before this run of five great years, okay, the previous 4 years before that, his overall record was 79-53. Villanova in its conference in those 4 years finished tied for second, tied for ninth, tied for 13th, and tied for seventh. Villanova made the NCAA tournament 3 out of those 4 years and won one game. So they were 1-3 in the tournament in those 4 years, okay? 79-53, 1-3 in the tournament. In Thad Matta's last 4 years at Ohio State, he was 87-50. Jay Wright was 79-53. Very similar. Mm-hmm. Jay Wright in his conference was 2nd, 9th, 13th, and 7th. Ohio State was 5th, 6th, 7th, and 10th. Mm-hmm. Ohio State made 2 NCAA tournaments and an NIT and was 1-2 in the tournament. Jay Wright was... He was 1-4 in the tournament. I said, No. They didn't make it 1 year.
Yeah,
they did. So they won one game, lost the first game, didn't make it, lost the first game. Anything? Or is it just me, like, making the point that I've beaten to death 1,000 times?
Well, I don't know. Like, certainly there's a difference between building a program and having one slip through your hands at the end. But I also don't
know. That was Jay Wright's 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th years at Villanova.
Oh, I thought you said it was his first 4 years.
No, it was the 4 years immediately preceding this 5-year run.
Oh.
So in years 9, 10, 11, and 12, they went to the Final Four, and then the next 4 years were the 4 years that I just talked about. In his 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th years, they, like, hit the wall. They weren't finishing at the top of their conference. They got in the NCAA tournament, got booted out right away. They had losing records some years in their conference. And his overall record was 79-53. And he stayed. And then this 5-year run of, like, they're as good as anybody came after that.
Yeah, I still wouldn't compare the two. Like, Ohio State was recruiting terribly at the end of Fad Mata's tenure.
Okay.
And I don't know if Villanova was or not, but, like, I don't. The year immediately after that was, like, when, like, Scotty Reynolds showed up in Villanova.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
I guess it's an interesting comparison to make, but no.
And they're around the same age. They're around the same age.
Yeah. Jay, like, Wright not dealing with the same health problems with that.
No, not dealing with that. Also, in the end, and this, we'll get back to football, but in the end, like, if there was one recruit, not that you can ever pin it on one recruit, but if there was one recruit that really did in Fad Mata, who would it have been? Like, not getting that guy was really, like, everybody was like, oh.
Like at the end?
Yeah.
Darius Bazley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what happened to Darius Bazley?
Well, before he decommitted from Syracuse and went to the G League, he also became a 5-star prospect, like the number 8 player in the country.
And now, who's he playing for in college?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah.
So Fad Mata, the thing that was like, how could you not get this kid? Turns out that kid's not playing for anybody.
Well, he got him and he lost him. But I think the counter argument that to that would be, they, like, and this is, I don't want this to come off the wrong way, because it's not a character issue of Darius Bazley. Like, it's his decision. It's how he chooses to live his life. That's fine. There was some misidentification of, like, personality fits in their recruiting, which is why they lost 5 guys from the 2015 mm-hmm. class, and which is why they had to commit from Darius Bazley and they lost it. And
but he's the number one kid in Ohio. They've got to recruit him.
Sure.
But if you got fired because you
I actually don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true. You have to recruit him, but I don't know if in the end you have to take him. If you don't think he's a fit, he's not a fit.
But wouldn't he have gotten crap for not getting probably the best kid in Ohio?
Probably. That's hard for people to understand, I think.
Yeah.
But
I just thought it was interesting. I'm not trying to relitigate.
Yeah.
Well, am I trying to relitigate? Maybe. I just think it's interesting. I just think, like, there was a lot of discussion. This final game, there was a lot of discussion about, like, see, this is what happens when you don't fire coaches too soon. You get Jay Wright and John Beilein. So I just wanted to look at some things that would apply to our audience through that lens.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, I don't remember those years from Jay Wright. Like, I just wasn't following Villanova that closely. But, like, beyond the on-court results being subpar for Ohio State, like, the program was clearly in a bad place.
Yes, except they would have gone to the tournament this year if Fad was still here.
Yeah, the roster would have been most.
Yeah, the roster would have been better. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, if now we get into a conversation of, like, how much of a difference. Like, Kata Bates-Diop makes them obviously better.
Yeah.
How much better? 20% better? 50%? 100%? He makes them from a team that had a losing record in the Big Ten last year to a team that finished second in the Big Ten. Like, is that just?
Yeah, but then you can also ask, like, would C.J. Jackson have improved as much as he
Which we've talked about. Yeah, which we've talked about. Yeah. But also, if you had, like, he got Dockets, but you would have had Braxton Beverly. Mm-hmm. They've got some good guys coming, but they lost Dane Goodwin. Thad had Dane Goodwin, who won Mr. Basketball, and now is going to Notre Dame.
Yep.
I just thought, you know, if we're just going to talk about letting coaches have a little more leash before you make a call, especially a guy who's been good.
Yeah, who earned it.
I just thought it was kind of interesting to talk about. My mom listens to our podcast. She's at my house right now. She fast-forwards, like many of you, fast-forwards through the inane football talk and only wants to hear the talk about food. And she said to me, are you going to talk about Easter candy? And then the second she asked that, someone asked about Easter candy. So we're going to talk about Easter candy, and then we're going to get to your questions about many other things. And I'm trying to find the Easter candy question. Brock Doctor, Easter Special, rank your candies 1 through 5, and rank your 5 best draft prospects from the 2018 Buckeyes roster. Holy crap. That is a tremendous double-dip question. I feel like people are taking on the challenge of trying to tie the food and football questions together.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Doug DeLillo also asked, did you celebrate Easter? If so, what did you eat? Feel like it's the one holiday everyone is all over the board on food. Also, are Peeps trash? So, let's start with Peeps, and then we'll talk about general Easter candy. But I looked up Peeps on Wikipedia, because Wikipedia never lies. Also, Peeps does have, like, they did have a bunch of crazy flavors this year. They had sour cherry, pancakes and syrup was a Peeps flavor this year, which almost made me want to try Peeps. Real quickly, Peeps are produced by Just Born, a candy manufacturer founded in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, by Russian immigrant Sam Born. So, in 1953, Just Born acquired the Rada Candy Company and its Marshmallow Chick line and replaced the painstaking process of hand-forming the chicks with mass production. Wow. Bill, do you like Marshmallow Peeps?
Nope. I said we did a test run for the Facebook Live we did at the beginning of the podcast.
Yep. Yeah.
And I said that no human should ever put Peeps in their body, and I stand by that. They're disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, they don't... I don't like marshmallows in general. I've had them, and they're fine. But Peeps, like, make marshmallows worse.
Yes. Like, it's not... Peeps are made... Says, what are Peeps? They are made from sugar, corn syrup, gelatin, and various food dyes. But I think most people, like it's in the name, it's like Marshmallow Peeps, right?
Yeah.
But they're not as good as marshmallows.
Right. No. No, they're gross. Yeah. I don't care. Pancakes and syrup. I
kind of want to try. Although you could just eat pancakes.
Yes. Yep.
I actually searched Peeps while you were mentioning that. The first story I found on Google News was a headline that said, Peeps are the most disgusting candy ever, need to burn.
Yeah. But that's not what you think.
No, I think they're okay. I mean, obviously, I prefer straight marshmallows to Peeps, but...
Well, not all... But now, the thing is, if you could coat a marshmallow in sugar, then you have an equivalent comparison. So I acknowledge that the Peep itself is not as good as a marshmallow, but it is coated in sugar. So, did you eat a Peep this Easter, Tim?
I did not.
Why not?
Wasn't an option.
Ooh.
You know, they weren't... I didn't actively search for them. I didn't actively get them, so...
They changed the interview schedule on us for football.
Really?
Yeah.
What's coming up?
No Urban between now and the spring game.
Really?
Just on the phone call. Do you want to give it a rundown?
Yeah, people like the inside baseball.
Wednesday, Bill Davis, Taver Johnson, linebackers and cornerbacks. I know you're geared up about that one.
Yes.
Next Monday, Tony Alford and running backs. No Urban.
Okay.
Next Wednesday, Urban on the Big Ten teleconference. Saturday, spring game. Monday after the spring game, tentative Urban.
Okay, that'd be good. Bless you.
Tuesday after the spring game, assistant coaches.
I like that. That'll be good.
That's a good day. That's always a good day.
Yeah. Well, we sort of missed a day, so they had to squeeze in another position group. I was actually getting worried about whether we were not going to get running back somehow.
Yeah.
Or linebackers. We can't miss Bill Davis. So I guess that's okay. Yeah. Urban's probably tired of us.
Yeah, and like what? We have more things to ask him, but he's sort of like, "What else can I say?" So
yeah, it's. I mean, most of the most relevant question is who's the quarterback, and the answer to that is going to continue to be, "I don't know. There isn't one yet."
Right.
So okay, alleged indestructibility is one of the subheads in the Wikipedia entry about.
Oh, is this the kind of food that's going to survive a nuclear holocaust?
Yeah.
So basically, if the nuclear apocalypse comes, all we're going to be able to eat is Twinkies and Peeps.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. You could put a Peep in a Twinkie. That'd be interesting.
I don't like Twinkies either.
Peeps? Really?
No. Crimpets, baby.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to have a separate Tasty Cake podcast, we can have a Tasty Cake podcast, Philly style. Peeps are sometimes jokingly described as indestructible. In 1999, I'm reading Wikipedia. In 1999, scientists at Emory University jokingly performed experiments on batches of Peeps to see how easily they could be dissolved, burned, or otherwise disintegrated. using such agents as cigarette smoke, boiling water, and liquid nitrogen. In addition to discussing whether peeps migrate or evolve, they claim that the eyes of the confectionery wouldn't dissolve in anything.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm trying to picture that right now.
Okay. As the marshmallow ages... This is bad. Wikipedia, sometimes the grammar is a little shaky.
It's because anybody can write it.
Yeah. Marshmallows age as they're exposed to air. The marshmallow dehydrates, becoming, quote, stale and slightly crunchy. According to Just Born, the company that makes Peeps, 25 to 30% of their customers prefer eating Peeps stale. Like, that is shocking to me.
Ugh.
Like, of that, like, if the to me, if you're going to eat a Peep, the saving grace is the freshness of a nice, chewy marshmallow.
So yeah. It becomes almost like a cookie, like a sugary, like a
crunch, like
yeah. Sugary wafer kind of deal.
Crunchy marshmallow does not appeal to me.
No. How hard is your Peep? That is not, I don't want to eat Peeps. All right, so what candy did anybody eat? Easter candy?
No.
What are you doing?
I just stayed here.
But I mean, but you didn't, you don't eat Twinkies.
It's not that I don't eat candy, it was just, I didn't go, I'm an adult, so I didn't go out and buy Easter candy for myself.
Leah didn't have an Easter egg hunt for you in the house?
No. Yeah, we didn't really celebrate Easter this year. Celebrated Passover.
Yeah.
Even though we're not Jewish, but yeah.
Okay. Tim, did you have Easter candy?
Yeah, I've got some in my apartment I still have yet to get to. I went and got my fiance actually some, this is going to sound weird, but I got her some Easter cookies from Easter cookies. Company down the road.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's some in Columbus, Mally's Chocolate in Cleveland's our staple. I can't find one here, and I haven't really actively looked. If there is one in Columbus, please point me in that direction.
Okay.
So I went and got her a dozen cookies, and my folks got us some other candies, like a Crunch Rabbit, some Buckeyes.
Good like a Buckeye.
Yeah, those are always good. And while I was at Show Company, I did buy some chocolate caramel corn.
Nice. Mm.
It's always, like, I like caramel corn. I love it when it's covered in chocolate. Lasted 2 days.
I've never had any popcorn that wasn't just, like, regular popcorn.
What?
Not, like, because I'm against it. I just never had it.
You've never had, like, caramel corn?
No.
Don't you eat caramel corn at the shore?
No.
On the boardwalk?
I don't, no. I've had kettle corn. That's not, like, it's like, sweeter, but.
Okay. All right, we're gonna have a Joey Lane podcast. We're gonna have a Kyle Snyder podcast, and we're gonna have a Landis Tries New Snacks podcast.
What are Cracker Jacks?
Cracker Jacks are caramel corn with peanuts.
Yeah, I'm out on that. I don't like peanuts.
Okay, let's get.
How about Landis Tries caramel corn? And Tim Tries tasty cake. Because there's an Ohio.
Oh yeah,
I was in Ohio and not born and raised. I haven't had much exposure to tasty cake.
They have them here. They're not as good, but they have them here.
Yeah. So I mean, bring some from Philly. Bring some if either guys in Philly anytime. Bring me some. I'd be eager to try.
There's some in my fridge right now. There's peanut butter candy cakes in my fridge.
Why are we talking about them?
Yeah, we could. I mean, if you guys would, we should have eaten them on the Facebook.
Also never had those, the peanut butter ones.
Oh my god!
I just eat the regular ones, regular candy cakes.
No, but there's no such thing as. What do you mean the regular candy cakes?
With the vanilla icing, like it's a chocolate cake with vanilla icing.
No. This is the one that looks like a hockey puck.
Yeah,
and it's like white
a cake inside.
Yeah, with peanut butter and then chocolate all around it.
Yeah, but instead of peanut butter, there's like a white frosting.
Yeah, that is not the regular one.
Yeah, it
is. The peanut butter one is the regular one.
No,
there.
No, it's not.
I just saw this. There are people on YouTube that have videos like so and so tries and they try different foods. I'm interested in what people think. Would people watch if we had, like, a Landis Tries section where...
Yeah. Oh,
Landis
every week?
Tries, yeah, Landis Tries... Like, at least during the summer, we get, like, random different things, like caramel corn, the tandy cakes you're talking about.
They're also called candy cakes with a K.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, I'm going to go get them.
Like
here.
That one. That's the regular.
No.
That looks like...
That's like dark chocolate. That's awful. No.
Yeah,
no.
That dark chocolate, no thank you. Because you're the only dark chocolate
It's not dark there. Chocolate.
Well,
it's called chocolate. Apparently, there's chocolate. There's coconut. There is a dark chocolate peanut butter.
Oh.
There's a double-licious peanut butter, and then a regular peanut butter.
Wait, are those all separate flavors?
Yes, but the default is the chocolate.
Okay, the chocolate, yes. Coconut, no.
Yeah, I'm out on coconut. I don't eat coconut.
Yeah, I mean, I get coconut as a sweet. It's just I just don't like it.
Okay. can't believe that you went, we talked for 3 minutes about how Villanova is not really Philly, and you've never had a peanut butter candy cake, Philly boy.
I used to not like peanut butter.
What?
I like it now, but I used to not like it.
What? All right, so this is, you guys can buy this in Ohio.
Yep.
Peanut butter candy cake. Cakes with chocolate-flavored coating and peanut butter filling.
Also only 95 calories per cake.
That
I'm also low in carbs.
Yeah, I'm going to have to start buying that now. I mean, that's the dilemma. Is I only have so much, like, fridge space, like, counter space for, like, snacks or whatever. I don't actively go out and buy them.
I put these in the fridge because they're better a little bit cold.
Yeah, smart.
Like a Snickers is better in the fridge.
I've always thought, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, desserts out there that are better cold. Like, for example, like, again, Cheryl and
Company. Ice cream.
Yeah, well, of course. That's the default. But.
You put the Cheryl's and Company in the fridge?
Yeah, put those in the fridge, and I like the taste of them. They add, like, a little bit of coolness in there. I think it accentuates the frosting a little
bit. I think that's as good as it is. That's as good as it gets to me. Like, white cake, a layer of peanut butter, and then chocolate on it.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, the other ones are better.
Really?
Yeah.
Then my mom will make like a homemade version of this where you just like bake like a white cake, spread peanut butter on it,
yep.
Pour chocolate on the top and then tilt and then chill it. No?
No, like it's good. I like it. But the other one's better.
Because I like actively don't like the other one. Wow. Okay. I feel like, yeah, I don't know if people, we can't do a poll question on this. Because it's a little too off the path. But
I'm going to a bachelor party. I leave on Wednesday in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, in a house full of 20 men from Philadelphia.
Yep.
So I'll ask them.
You'll do a poll?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that you are the only person in that house who had not eaten a peanut butter candy cake before this week.
I bet that's true. But I would like to know what people think is the default. Because you think that's the default.
I think that's the normal.
And yeah. I don't. Yeah.
All right. Peyton Stamper, on to your questions. Peyton Stamper at Peyton Stamper 55. Y'all touched on this on the YouTube, kind of, and this is what we just talked about. But realistically, what are the chances Tate Martell actually starts this year? Again, we're like, I think 10% at this point is a realistic thing. So I wanted to point out that we probably should have used Peyton's question earlier, but Peyton, we talked about it because we thought people would be interested in it.
Yeah.
And I do think, I just, there are some guys, I'm trying to think of like who other examples would be. Like DeMario McCall is certainly that way. But the idea of that sometimes you get caught up in like fanciful things with them that maybe weren't ever really going to happen. And then they kind of leave and they never do the things that you spend a lot of time talking and writing about.
Yeah.
And maybe Tate Martell is never the quarterback here, right?
Sure.
That's definitely on the table too.
Yep.
But I don't think at all, this is not a disingenuous discussion.
By the way, Google the words, will Tate Martell ever be Ohio State starting quarterback? And then read the story I wrote last fall.
It's a good headline.
Yeah.
Peyton Stamper, second question. How good can the defensive backfield be for Ohio State? I know, Tim, you've talked to a lot of these guys, but Urban was really all in on Jordan Fuller the other day.
Yep.
Yes.
What did you think of that?
Corners, too.
Significant to me. He's going to play what Alex Strange called the Falcon of the defense, because now they have the field safety and the boundary safety. And Fuller is a guy I've been sold on for a while. When we did our top 10 players, I had him, I believe, all the way up. Like, way higher than you guys. I think I am all the way up at, like, number four, number five, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay.
Way higher than you guys. I just think he's the best playmaker they have in that back seven. He's proven. And Urban has raved about what he's done in the spring, which is nothing but a good thing for a secondary that has some questions. Has questions outside of Fuller. I expect, you know, Kendall Sheffield, I expect to be a starting corner, especially after building off a good indoor track season. The other starting job, probably Damon Arnett. Right now, with Jeffrey Okuda sidelined for the spring, I kind of expect those two will battle for like number two potentially, and then the other safety is interesting. Everything we've seen in practice kind of leads us to believe Isaiah Pryor could be the guy at number two. Although I will say, during that practice we saw last week, I kept looking back at Brendan White. He's a physical specimen at 6'2", like 6'2", 205, I think. Something in that neighborhood. I don't have to weigh it off the top of my head, but
That's Brendan White is just fits the mold of one of those guys who comes in, is just a good football player. They got to sort of figure out what to do with him. And then, like, once he sort of settles in at a football position, like, he's off to the races. I think Darren Lee was like that. I think Malik Hooker, not that they didn't always know Malik Hooker was a safety, but he was a basketball player in high school as much as he was a football player. I think he fits that category. And I think, like, the idea of Brendan White just like, oh, Brendan White, he's awesome at football. He's going to start, I think, would not at all be a shock to me.
I'd be pretty shocked if he started ahead of Isaiah Pryor.
Because I think Isaiah Pryor is like a really highly rated recruit and like is everything you want in a safety recruit. But sometimes like the guy, like guys who are just great football players are great football players. But I do think Brendan White might be the nickel if he's not, if Pryor's a safety too.
Yeah, what the physical profile made me think of, I'm going to go way back a little bit to kind of, you know, the end of the 2000s. And Doug, you might know this better than me. The star position.
Mm-hmm.
What Brendan White reminds me of is what I think they wanted Tyler Moeller to be. Because I remember Tyler Moeller, everybody talked how he was a freak of an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And Brendan White is a freak of an athlete by all standards. I wonder, depending on how they would deploy the nickel, whether they would go with that third safety to give him the versatility of having, you know, the run support guy, almost like that third linebacker, be a third corner, you get the best of both worlds in third safety. If they were ever to have kind of a star nowadays, would Brendan White kind of fit that mold, do you think?
I mean, the star is sort of that was like a fancy word and a new thing back then. That was like the answer to the spread offenses was we need – basically, it's when we go nickel, it's like a starting nickel position, you know, that a guy who can hit, who can blitz, who can also cover and cover that slot receiver. And then we only have two linebackers on the field. But that's sort of what, like, that's what Darren Lee, that, now that has just become a linebacker. Yeah. That's what Darren Lee was. It's what Chris Worley was a lot when he's outside. It's what Jerome Baker was sometimes. It's what Malik Harrison sort of seems to be. Like smaller linebackers who are kind of like safeties, but I do think Brendan White, when they truly go nickel, I think he could be out there. But you said you would be surprised. Do you just think it makes sense that like Isaiah Pryor was a big time recruit? It's his time. He's the guy.
Yeah, and I also think I disagree that Brendan White would play nickel because I think you want a corner, you want a cover guy in that spot, don't you?
Unless one of your safeties can cover as well as one of your corners, but so, if they have so like Sheffield Arnett and Okuda,
yeah,
then I mean, why wouldn't it be that?
I guess you could also like Brendan White comes onto the field in nickel, but the actual nickel corner is Jordan Fuller.
Yes, like that kind of.
And then,
which is what they did last year, right? They brought Eric Kiffin to play safety, and then Fuller went down to the slot.
And we were talking to Greg.
They moved to that, yeah.
And we were talking to, I believe it was safeties and corners, I think at Pro Day, I asked Grinch about nickel, and he gave me an interesting point that it's like, by now, the strong safety is kind of a dead position, that like both safeties have to be able to cover, and it's just a matter of, do you cover most of the field, or do you play the boundary position and end up, you know, essentially being a slot corner, I believe.
And just so people, I don't like, it's hard. Boundary and field, I think, is hard for some people, right? It just means that when you're in college football, you're always, you're not in the middle of the field. You're on a hash most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. That the offense is not situated perfectly in the middle of the field. So the boundary corner, and they do a lot of that at Ohio State. They talk boundary corner and field corner and boundary safety and field safety. The boundary is the guy who's covering the smaller part of the field to the sideline, to the boundary.
Yeah.
And then the field is the rest of the field. But then usually, right, boundary corner is more like your one on, it's like your best corner, because that guy, like, you sort of, he has to do all that by himself, right? And then on the field side, you give help.
I don't know the answer to that.
Boundary corner, they always like boundary corner. Ohio State's like, are you a boundary corner? Like, you, like, you're, we're not going to give you as much help. You're the guy. I think that's right. If that's wrong, I'll delete it.
I just don't know. Like, I don't know if when they have, but the way they're rotating, I don't know if they differentiate it that way. I think they were doing that when they had, like, it was just Eli Apple and Duran Grant, but...
Well, but I think they... But they don't follow receivers around, so they stay on the same side of the field with their corners. They usually don't have a corner follow a guy, so then it's like, you're either playing a receiver or you're playing a side. So...
Yeah.
That got a little bit too football for us. We got...
Anyway, Tasty Cakes are good.
Yeah! Twinkies are crazy. Urban, quote, I'm actually pleased our safety position right now is not solid, the one is. Again, this is like Urban Meyer. When you read Urban Meyer transcripts, a lot of times it's a little clunky. Jordan Fuller, we have to keep him healthy because he's playing excellent right now. So that's a big praise for Urban for Jordan Fuller. And then he's saying the second safety position is up in the air. We don't have mistakes at corner. We have very good rotation at corner right now, and that's with Okuda out.
Yeah.
So that praise is directly aimed then at Damon Arnett and Kendall Sheffield, but then also you presume Sean Wade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Tyreek Johnson.
Tyreek Johnson, yeah, some of the early enrolled freshmen who were working in there.
Seven Banks.
Yeah, Johnson and Banks is there. Definitely getting right. Marcus Williams, yep. So that's good for the corners that, you know, a guy who's like a top 10 recruit is out for the spring and he's still saying good things about the corners. So do we think, I mean, directly to the question, can the defensive backfield, like, be great? Or is it just going to be, like, pretty good?
I don't know. Like, I always wonder, and I've talked about this before, like, who's feared? Who's the guy on the back? And maybe it's Jordan Fuller. Because I don't think he quite showed that last year, but it's not to say he can't get there. But I don't know.
Like, the way Malik Hooker was feared.
Yeah, or even, like, Marshawn Lattimore, I think, was all, like, and maybe Eli Apple to a lesser extent. But, like, Marshawn Lattimore was a lockdown corner.
Yep.
And Malik Hooker was terrifying. And they were in the same secondary together. So I don't know. There's a difference between, like, really good and solid and certainly good enough and, like, scary. And I don't know if the secondary is scary good just yet.
And feeling like, we wish we could do this on offense, but we're worried that if we try to throw these things, like, they're going to get picked off.
Yeah.
Tim, how good do you think it can be?
I think it can be good, especially with the pedigree of these guys. It's just, there's so many unproven commodities, it could really go in a wide range of directions. With a lot of unprovens, I mean, I still don't know how good we think. I'm still not sure how good Kendall Sheffield's going to be, although I do think he really improved as the year went on. I thought he played his best at the end of the season, including in the Cotton Bowl. I thought he was pretty good in that game.
Wow, this is a good question from Nicky Unders. I don't think I can ask it, though. Ryan Sullivan at Sully 5351. Alabama hires ex-coaches / coordinators as analysts. Do the Buckeyes have analysts? Will they? Yeah,
they have them. Not as high profile.
But somewhat, like,
a couple years ago, Joker Phillips was one, and
Bill Davis was one,
and who was, like, Brian Knorr was the guy who was, like, at Indiana, right?
Like, Brian Knorr had been, like, Indiana's defensive coordinator and was an analyst here, making, like, $35,000 or whatever. Like, I did a little story on that. It's not quite like Butch Jones at Alabama. Like, Alabama does it to a higher degree than anybody else. Wasn't Sarkisian an analyst there initially?
I think Mike Loxley might have been, too, for at least initially hired that way.
Yeah, those are – and, like, Michigan made Ed Warner an analyst for, like, a month until they got all the coaching stuff sorted out. And Ed Warner – that was – Ed Warner knew he was going to be the offensive line coach at Michigan. They just had to do some paperwork and get Tim Drevno out of there. Yeah, Ohio's like, I don't think anybody does it like Bama, right? I mean, I've read or seen.
Yeah.
But Ohio State definitely does it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, they have guys who have been around. There was a guy, I can't think of his name, who was around at Ohio State, like, in a role like that. And then when Chris Ash went to Rutgers, Chris Ash took him and made him a full-time assistant.
Vince Okurch.
Made him the special teams coach.
Yeah.
So, But the main point of that is, like, when you have guys in those roles who are making not very much money and are not full-time assistants and they're not young guys on the way up, because traditionally those roles had been young guys on the way up roles, and now Alabama turned it into a older, established guy treading water while waiting for his next job, whether it be at Alabama or somewhere else. But Ohio State has definitely jumped on that to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't know. And I guess we'd have to, like, FOIA that information, I think.
Yeah.
Who it is.
Who everybody who's making money from.
Because it's not listed on the team website. Yeah.
No.
We should do that.
I'm going to write stuff down. Do we have the scholarship chart? It's always good to update people. Ryan Sullivan, his second question was, how are the scholarship numbers looking? And we actually had this conversation at Ohio State the other day. Yeah. With people checking in, because we know we track it.
I got it right here. Ohio State is at 88 right now.
88. And they have to be at 85 by preseason practice. When you look at those 88, and it's not name names, we always say that, it's not fair for us to talk about guys' lives and say, like, oh, I think this guy might be out of here, and this guy might be out of here. But when you look at the 88... Are there three names that jump out to think, yeah, well, that would make sense either as a medical situation that he would not be playing anymore medically, or as a very obvious transfer situation. It's a guy who's just been around and just clearly has not played and is not going to play, and it would make 100% total sense for both player and program for him to transfer.
I have a hard time getting the three. I think we can, whatever, we can assume quarterback maybe. Like, if you want to assume a quarterback will not be on the roster, that gives you one.
That's one.
But I can't get the three.
I can maybe think of, like, two.
So that's a thing. That's a thing to watch.
Yep.
Now, sometimes there was a guy a couple years ago that it happened to who was in the recruiting class, signed on signing day, and then, like, by the middle of the summer, it was like, oh, that guy didn't make it academically. He's not going to be here.
Yeah.
Happened
a couple times. There was a lineman, like, there was an offensive lineman that happened to and a defensive back that happened to.
The lineman was IMG, right?
Yeah. I forget his name.
I can't think of it either.
And then the defensive back was Kareem Felder.
Right.
Who changed his name and I think is now at Rutgers.
Right. So, so what does that mean? Like, if we are looking and we can't, and there's not guys jumping off the page, because again, a bunch of guys, they're at 88, and a bunch of guys have already left. Like,
yeah.
Jack Willoughby already left. And
Wallabaugh.
Wallabaugh. Why did I say Willoughby?
Because he was the kicker 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah. And then Wallabaugh went to Duke, which is where the kicker had been from.
Yeah.
Like, were there, and were a couple, who else left? Like, Nick Connors and medical. Which we had been, as we had looked at that chart for about a year, we said, well, we don't think Nick Connors is going to be able to play anymore, so that's out there as a medical.
Kevin Feeder.
Keir Hawkins.
Keir Hawkins.
Jack Wallabaugh.
Said him.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Trying to think who else. AJ Alexander was a medical.
Okay. So, I mean, that's like, you know, we're a lot of those, the obvious ones have already happened and they still need a couple more. So that's just a reality. That's just a reality to stay on top of. And,
yeah, I don't know what it is or who it is.
So, okay. Always a good question. Eddie Vulek at Zadea. Always good questions. JT Barrett averaged a little over 2,800 passing yards and 800 rushing yards a year. If Dwayne Haskins wins the QB battle, what are his numbers?
3,000 passing, 500 rushing.
500 rushing?
Yeah. Quarterback run is not going away, no matter who it is.
I'm going to say 3,300. 3,300 passing, 350 rushing.
So, JT Barrett last year threw for 3,053 yards. That was the most yards in his career in a season. He threw for at least 300 yards in only three games, Indiana, Penn State, and Nebraska. He, a lot of the blowouts didn't stay in, right?
Right.
He only threw for 30 yards against Michigan, because he was hurt. He only threw for 114 against USC, because he only threw it 17 times. I think, is a 4,000-yard passing season on the table for Dwayne Haskins?
I don't think so.
With the way Ohio State wants to run the football, and the fact that it's forever has been a run first program, that's probably not going to happen.
Dwayne Haskins in 14 games couldn't average 286 yards per game. That's 4,000. 14 games. It's your bowl and a Big Ten championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll get taken out some of the games.
So you think it would? That would mostly be
4,000 is a lot when you have the running backs that they have. Quarterback run will be lessened, but isn't going away completely, and you have two good running backs, plus some games where you're going to be up 50 to nothing. So I think it'll be hard for me to get there.
JT Barrett was 32nd in the nation in passing yards last year. There were eight players who threw for 4,000.
Yeah.
And the most prolific passer in the Big Ten was Trace McSorley, who threw for 3,570. Hmm. He was 17th in the country. Man, that's a good, like, I don't know, we'd have to put odds on that, but it's like 4-1 or something, like,
yeah.
Dwayne Haskins throwing for 4,000 yards. To have an Ohio State quarterback be one of the top 10 passers in the country by yardage. And when you're playing the game of what they need their running backs to do, blowouts, that kind of thing. But it's like, I don't know, would they be less inclined to take him out of blowouts because he needs action?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. But also, you just had a close quarterback battle, and if guys are around, then you want to play them.
Yeah.
It's interesting. All right. Let's see. Greg Miller, this is good because Bill's been actually working on this too. Greg Miller at OSU Farm Boy. Help me understand. 85 scholarships, 105 on the roster, but all these preferred walk-on offers the last few months. Looks like they are over the max limit. Crunch the numbers.
Yeah, I saw that question and was confused by it. What preferred walk-on does not mean you get a scholarship. It means your roster spot's guaranteed.
So that's, I think that's worth like saying. Just like that, to make that clear.
Yeah, like preferred walk-on can certainly lead to a scholarship. And it has in the past, and it will in the future.
But they do not. It very seldom leads to a like, hey, this guy's so good, we're going to give him a scholarship like 3 years.
Oh no, it's usually like if you're a senior and there's one around, like Joe Berger and Craig Fata got them
right
at the end of their careers. And it happens. Yeah, it happens every year. But no, you're not. It's just a guarantee of a roster spot. You don't have like there are preferred walk-ons, and then there are the walk-ons who in. Whatever it is, January, Ohio State puts the word out to Ohio State students and says, hey, we're looking for walk-ons.
Right.
Come try out. Those guys are not guaranteed a roster spot.
Right.
But if you were a recruited walk-on, you are.
And I don't know how many preferred walk-on offers there are. I mean, but there is 85 to 105. It just means there's going to be fewer guys making it from tryouts, from the wide-open tryouts.
Yeah, and they have the thing you alluded to that I'm working on is how they have like expanded and really ramped up their walk-on program to the point where they are bringing in players who, frankly, should be scholarship players at other places, but instead are walk-ons at Ohio State.
Right. You know what? We're not going to get to everything this week. You got to get out of here, right, Tim?
Yeah, in a few minutes.
We have to phrase this the right way. What injury or pairing of injuries would be the most devastating? It's like you don't want to give anyone the bad juju by talking about like who might get hurt, but it's just like the idea of like what are the most important, like who are the most important guys on the roster, which is always related to how important your position is, how good you are, and how much better you are than the backup / how uncertain is the backup position.
Yeah.
So like where if J.K. Dobbins. Like, how valuable is J.K. Dobbins? He's super awesome, really good. But, like, you could just give all the carries to Mike Weber and you'd probably be in the same realm, right? Mm-hmm. So where would it be like, wow, that guy is so good at what he does and we're not sure who else could do it. He's really, really valuable.
Offensive tackle. Either one.
So if I say...
Yeah, like we don't know. Mumford's going to be a starting right tackle and we haven't seen a lot of him to know that he'll... automatically be good, but he's the starter.
Right.
And I guess the third tackle, like Brandon Bowen can play tackle, and like Josh Allaby, who's a converted defensive lineman, is also a number two tackle. But there is not a lot of depth at that position.
But if Isaiah Prince
was... Nick Petit Frere, like then you're going the freshman.
Right. Actually, that might be the answer.
Yeah.
Is Nick Petit Frere going to like be the second team left tackle?
Possible.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I had sort of forgotten about that. I think Jordan Fuller... might fall in that category.
Mm-hmm.
If Jordan Fuller is like this playmaker, big time guy in the secondary, and all of a sudden, like who's going to play safety if not him?
Yeah,
I think that would be a drop off. Wouldn't that be a drop off?
Yeah, he's the only proven commodity in that safety room.
Nick Bosa, obviously, he's the best player on the team.
Yeah, but it's like, but if you had to put Chase Young and Jonathan Cooper on the field, like almost every snap. It wouldn't be the end of the world.
Yeah.
Like, you'd still have a good defense, but it's just like Nick Bosa is so good.
Yeah.
That, of course, you miss him because no one's as good as him.
Yeah.
But
I've done a lot of that. I think there were some people who would probably, like, question the depth at linebacker and safety. But Urban seems pretty high on the depth at linebacker, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Even with the tough Borland injury? So, I don't know. Like, there's not a lot of... They're not lacking for depth at a lot of positions.
Yeah, I think they're... It's because, like, these recruiting classes that, you know, these highly rated recruiting classes, you would end up playing, like, a really, really highly rated guy early.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is... Then he plays a couple games and he figures it out and he's probably pretty good. Mm-hmm. All right, run through a couple more. Some of these are in the same vein. Scott Duda, our guy, 2 weeks ago you were saying it would be a disaster if no one emerged in the quarterback battle. Here we are now. People are talking themselves into it being a good thing that all three are closely bunched. Is it more likely they are all playing comparatively or Urban is struggling to commit? Mm. Chase Richardson, how long do we wait until we start the red alert in terms of the quarterback battle? Herb said that once you take away the veteran receivers, they are especially weak. How does that bode for the future of the receiver room and recruiting? I'm not spinning it as like, it's great.
No, I don't think... Did we say disaster? Maybe we did. I don't know what we say on here. I don't think it's a disaster, but it's obviously it's worse than what it could be.
I think we were talking about, like, this is happening, like, in week one. You know, we were talking about, like, that's when we were getting...
Yeah, I'm not... I don't think you can hit panic mode in the quarterback competition in April.
No.
Yeah. So, and I also think, like, I just refuse to believe that all three of these guys aren't good. Like, whatever Urban says, like, when you take their top receivers off the field, they're not playing very well. Like, I think all three are good, and I think all three can do the job next year. So I think that's just Urban saying stuff to pump guys up.
Really?
Yeah, I mean... Does it make sense to you that he, like... It just seems crazy to me that he would have that, like, the concern would be on that level with Burrow, Haskins, or Martell.
Yeah, no, I think they could all be good. I think
they're also pulling out... They're not just pulling out receivers, they're also pulling out offensive linemen.
Yeah. No, I think it's. I think all this is fascinating. I think it's interesting. I think it's great to talk about. I think it's important. I think we are nowhere near panic. I think this is all. I think everything that's happened is just part of a normal process. Maybe not exactly how we thought the process would go, but there's nothing to me that is like unusual. Like it's more like interesting. Like, I thought a guy might like just take over by now. Yeah. It's interesting to me that Urban is saying that they haven't, but. I don't think it precludes the fact that one of them could. But in the end, but I'm not... Give me a guy. Always in the choice of, like, there's a lot of good guys, it's hard to pick, or there's a star, give me the star every time. So mm-hmm. The same thing I say at receiver, like, great. Depth is great. But depth is great, like, when something happens. Like, when things are normal, give me a superstar. Give me a guy who can't take off the field. Give me a quarterback who says, it's my job and I'm not giving it up. So... Like, I am not spinning this as like a, oh, wow, they're all so good. That's awesome for Ohio State. I'm intrigued that nobody seized it. But I don't think it's like a terrible, I don't think it means that bad things are going to happen.
No, I don't think it means bad things are going to happen either. And I also think it's like, we're very geared up about it. Like, we want to know who the winner is. But it's also, spring ball will end next week. And then there are 3.5 months before they practice again.
Absolutely. And so, that stuff in the summer matters.
It's a lot of time.
Chase, if you could only have one snack food the rest of your life, what would it be?
Combos.
Ah! How can we bring it full circle? Brand, type, and flavor, if applicable.
I don't know. I don't snack a lot.
What?
I don't.
Really?
I eat a lot of food, but I don't, like...
You don't sit around and snack.
Yeah. That's not to say, like, I don't like them. I'm just trying to think, like, I don't have, like, oh, that's my go-to snack food.
All snack foods are my go-to.
Yeah,
snack food.
Maybe that's a better way of saying it.
I would maybe pick like I like a good like fluffy like I call it like a cheese curl. Like Doritos are good, but I think I get tired of Doritos sometimes. Mm-hmm. Chips are good, but they're not quite as exciting for me. I like pretzels. I like Wheat Thins.
Oh, I'll eat like soft pretzels all day.
Yeah, like we've been doing that because we have like some East Coast soft pretzels that we had in the freezer. We just ate them last night. We heated them up and ate them. And I was like, that was really good.
Yeah,
but I might go like a cheese curl.
I like a Frito.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would pick,
but like, not all corn chips, just Fritos.
Okay,
agreed. I would pick like a peanut butter Ritz Bits.
Ooh, that's very specific.
Interesting.
Well. The peanut butter is better than the cheese, I will say that.
I agree with that.
I actually disagree with that.
Really?
You're bringing, like, the hot takes on food today.
Yeah, no,
I prefer savory to sweet.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's a good one. Get a little protein in there. I think that's important. All right, we can't get to everybody. We'll save some of these for next week. There's a couple that are really good, and I want us to like have time to think about a couple of them. Chad M. at Sneela187, I couldn't find the live blog of Tom Bielik's Niagara Falls trip. Where is it?
Well, number one, I appreciate that he obviously listened last week, and he heard the comment where I was called Tom,
yes.
Some guy named Tom. And that actually linked to some guy with a Czech name.
Oh, yeah.
At Tom Bielik, his name's not Tom Bielik.
Tomas Bielczyk. Is at Tom
Bielczyk, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a robot.
He has no tweets, so he could be a Twitter robot.
Does he follow Tate Martell?
Yeah.
Ouch. But Canada is not happening until next month. I've got a hotel book for that. It'll be the weekend of Mother's Day. I'll be in another country.
Nice. Your mom appreciates that.
Oh, no, I'm coming back in time to have dinner with her on Mother's Day.
Nice. Last question at OSU Farm Boy Greg Miller. What is the number one thing you're looking forward to in the spring game? Passing effectiveness, O-line stability, Martell package? What is it?
Passing. Just like, I just want to watch them throw.
Yep.
Because I think there's not going to be much quarterback around. I'd be shocked if there's anything Tate Martell package related, because why would you show that in the spring game? Just want to see him throw.
Yeah. I think that's basic, but that's it. And that's what they will show.
Yeah.
I think they're just going to get out and chuck it a lot. And so, you can always tell, like, no matter what the defense is doing, you can sort of tell when guys are throwing. Like,
yeah, it's almost like a 7-on-7.
Yeah.
A little, not quite, because there's a pass rush, they just can't hit you, but they're in your face.
Right.
So it's a little, you learn a little more from it, but yeah, they're not. That's why I'm nervous about the rain, though.
Yeah, that would stink. Maybe they can have it inside if it rains. What are they going to do? Yeah. God, we got
to. Can they fit 80,000 people in the Woody?
Yeah, we'll try.
Although, to be fair, if it rains and a guy shines, you might have your answer.
That's true. That was like it rained on Sam Darnold's pro day and everybody went crazy. Because he threw a wet ball. Didn't melt. Yeah. all right, that's it for Buckeye Talk. Thanks to you guys for listening. Drop those 5-star reviews on Apple Tunes. Follow us on Twitter at Doug Lay Maurice. At Bill Landis 25, at Tim Bielik. Read our stories at cleveland.com/OSU. We have interviews again on Wednesday. We'll have more stories coming off that. Interviews again next Monday. And then the spring game is Saturday, April 14th. It's like a $5 ticket. If it's nice weather, it's a nice day. If you've never been in the shoe,
yep.
If you don't have access to tickets during the season, if you don't have money to blow on really expensive tickets, come to the shoe for the spring game. Like, you get, it's a good simulation, and you get to cheer for all Buckeyes. I highly recommend it.
And I will, like, we have not received word yet that it is sold out, but there are seats missing because of construction, and I believe last year they did not sell tickets the day of the game because they just sold out of their allotment, because we're only 80,000 seats.
Right.
So if you're thinking about going and you don't have tickets yet, I would buy them now.
Yeah.
And not hope that you'll be able to walk up, because there's a chance you might not be able to.
Yeah. No, and it's just one of those. I mean, it would have been when I was a kid, that would have been a thing like my family did of like, let's go to the $5 game.
Yeah.
Because we maybe can't go to like the $75 or $85 or $100 or $400 game in the fall. So it gets you in the shoe. It gets you and your family watching Ohio State football in their home. So podcast next week, we'll preview the spring game a little bit more. And as always, send questions to at Buckeye Talk Pod. If you want to send questions during the week, like when we're not when I don't put a call out on Twitter.
Oh yeah, there were actually some. I usually go through and mark them off, and I forgot to do it this week.
So if you sent to Buckeye Talk Pod, we'll save them and get to them next week too. Yeah. Maybe we'll just do all questions next week.
Sounds good.
Sure. Yeah. Makes our workload easier.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Less thinking.
And we tried the Facebook Live. Go ahead and subscribe if you don't. Follow us on Facebook. It's the Ohio State. It's cleveland.com Ohio State. Just like type that in up at the top of the Facebook search and you'll find it. And then follow that. And our stories pop up there. They do some other stuff sometimes. We're not in charge of that anymore. We used to be. But there's things that pop up there, and we'll try to do some more Facebook Lives from the podcast. So thanks to you guys again. For Bill and Tim, I'm Doug. And that was Buckeye Talk.